concludes saying as NMED officials look into the cause of the rain, Stone said if the Milky Rain happens again, residents are encouraged to collect fresh samples and submit them to the NMED or the local field office in Silver City. Saying, folks, if you do see this weird rain again, make sure you collect samples and then send them to us. Don't have them tested yourself. Don't have them tested anywhere else. We'll do it for you. No worries. We've got it under control. You gotta love it. It's at least consistent, my friend.
Reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for this hour, they're going to be the views of our good friend Joyce Riley. Hi, Joyce. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. Doing great, thank you, sir.
All right, fine. Well, of course, for those of you who don't know, Joyce has her own radio program and here on Genesis early in the morning from, I guess, 9 to noon on the East Coast and from 6 to about 9 here on the Pacific Coast. Anyway, she's sitting with the Gulf War Veterans Association and is out there helping the veterans and trying to do basically what we're doing, and that's pointing out the problems that face our society today that have to be addressed if we hope to maintain our freedom. So you pick up the story there, Joyce. What were we going to talk about?
Well, one thing I'd like to talk about just to begin with is kind of an interesting situation. You know, you look at the news and you hear them tell you, of course, all the glitz and glamour of what they want you to know, but they don't really tell you the real story. Well, one of the things that we've been talking about, and I'm going to be focusing on this tomorrow morning with Ted Sampley. Ted Sampley is head of an organization called Vietnam Veterans Against the against John McCain.
Oh, I've had
Ted on
before.
And I hope
it
won't hurt your feelings if I talk about John McCain here for a second.
No, that's fine. I think that there's a man who really deserves to have his heroic activities in Vietnam brought out, because I've interviewed Ted Sampley, and I know how deeply he and many other Vietnam veterans feel.
And his website is really excellent. If you go to Veterans Against John McCain or Veterans Against McCain, I think you'll take a real interest in what is said there. But I just wanted this I thought was specifically relevant to sort of like G.W. Bush. You know, we talked about having his military records, President Bush's military records, and showing that he had been taken off flight status and that he really did not fulfill his commitment to the military. Well, John McCain is, you know, talked about as being the incredible hero, which we know he's not. However, I just thought you'd find this interesting. Did you know that John McCain lost some U.S. Navy aircraft?
No, I didn't know that.
Okay.
How did he lose the aircraft?
I think this is great. Student pilot McCain the third, John McCain, lost jet number one in 1958 when he plunged into Corpus Christi Bay while practicing landings. Pilot McCain the third, John McCain, lost another plane 2 years later when he was deployed in the Mediterranean. He was flying too low over the Iberian Peninsula. He took out some power lines. Now, that's pretty low, if you ask me, which led to a spate of newspaper stories in which he was predictably identified as the son of an admiral. Now, he was the son and grandson of an admiral, which really kept him out of too much trouble during, protected him somewhat. Then, get this one, Dr. Stan. Pilot McCain, John McCain III, lost aircraft number 3 in 1965 when he was returning from flying a Navy trainer solo to Philadelphia for an Army-Navy football game. He radioed, "I've got a flame out," and ejected at 1,000 feet. The plane crashed to the ground and McCain floated to a deserted beach. Now, those are not stories you normally hear about, are they?
No.
Now, Ted Sampley has committed that these are, in fact, true to me. Then, this is a sad one, a very sad one. Combat pilot McCain III lost his fourth on July 29, 1967, soon after he was assigned to the USS Forrestal as an A-4 Skyhawk combat pilot. Now, this is a sad situation, not necessarily his fault, but while waiting his turn for takeoff, an accidentally fired rocket slammed into McCain's plane. He escaped from the burning aircraft, but the explosions that followed killed 134 sailors, destroyed at least 20 aircraft, and threatened to sink the ship.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here at Genesis.
As the old saying goes, if you give a man a fish, you feed him for a day. But if you give him a Berkey system, you give him the ability to obtain purified water for a lifetime. This year, when giving Christmas gifts, instead of unwanted trinkets, give a meaningful and substantial gift. Berkey systems are ideal for every member of your family, especially the young ones in college. Unlike other water filtration systems, Berkey purifiers are portable. They require no plumbing, and the elements don't have to be replaced every 4 to 6 months. Perfect for anyone on a tight budget. And more importantly, if there's an unexpected emergency, your loved ones will be prepared. That's because Berkey systems are able to purify raw, untreated water. Check out our Christmas specials at BerkeyWater.com. With one of our quantity specials, you not only get a discount, but in one stop, you can get gifts for the entire family. And it's BerkeyWater.com or call 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438.
Where do you think one of the most toxic places on earth is? The answer may surprise you. It's in your body. The colon is a natural breeding ground for disease-producing germs. It may not sound like a very appealing subject, but it should not go ignored. For over a decade now, natural health expert Dr. Lauren Ritter has educated people everywhere about the benefits of internal cleansing. Now, these benefits include higher energy levels, more comfortable digestion, high immune support, and healthier looking skin. Now you can try Dr. Ritter's colon cleansing program from the privacy of your own home. It's safe and natural, and it gently cleanses the entire digestive tract. Don't let your body be the most toxic place on earth. Take care of your health by cleansing your colon and body. Dial 1-800-457-9914. That's 1-800-457-9914. Call now to find out how you can get the colon and body cleanse risk-free for 30 days. Dial 1-800-457-9914. Call now.
Spyville.com is your choice for everything spy-related. Stealth cameras cleverly disguised as items commonly found around the home, night vision cameras, covert phone and voice recorders, powerful binoculars, security systems, and more. Find hidden cameras wherever you go with the small handheld spy finder and locate hidden transmitters with one of our bug detectors. Spyville.com also carries a wide variety of night vision scopes, allowing you to see in the darkest of conditions. Protect your home and business with our complete line of security cameras, made to fit any situation. We also carry a large selection of personal security devices. Keep your personal belongings secure using our hidden safes made out of everyday household items, including an outlet safe and even an underwear safe. Go to spyville.com. That's spyville.com or call us today at 866-779-8455. That's 866-779-8455. Use promotional code GCN007 and receive a 5% discount when ordering online. Spyville.com, where your personal security and well-being is our goal.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here at the Genesis Communication Network, and certainly our guest is Joyce Riley, and she was just telling us of some of the situations, the fact that John McCain had lost a number of planes before, of course, he was shot down and over North Vietnam, but because he was an admiral's son, he always got special treatment, so go right ahead.
Well, and then comes the fifth aircraft. Now, I don't know how many people get to have five aircraft to their record before they're somehow counseled or whatever. But the fifth one was the one that we all know about, which was he lost this plane 3 months after the last one, and the one on the USS Forrestal during his 23rd mission over North Vietnam when he failed to avoid a surface-to-air missile. He ejected from the plane, breaking both arms and a leg, and subsequently parachuted into a lake near Hanoi. And that is, of course, when he was transported then to the Hanoi Hilton. So, you know, his fact sheet and his military information is not as outstanding as they would like for people to know. Now, it gets pretty nasty on the website, because there are people that are not very happy with what John McCain has allegedly said he did versus what really happened. So, again, the website is Veterans Against John McCain, and you can check that out. But that's just kind of the way the news twists whatever they want. An example of that is what's happening on these returning military people from Gulf War II, from Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom. And what we're seeing is an amazing increase in the number of people that are ruled to have mental problems. Now, this is kind of like the issue of mercury in fish. You know, they warn us, there's a lot of mercury in fish, so be careful. Only eat it once a week, in tuna especially. But they don't tell you why there's the mercury in tuna. They just tell you avoid it. Well, with the Gulf War veterans, the same thing is happening. These returning veterans that are going to the VA system, and I'll talk about the VA system in just a second, are getting an absolute unbelievable dust-off, if you will, because they're all being ruled in just absolutely almost every situation to have a mental problem. I don't care, as if in the second Gulf War when they came in with rectal bleeding or lymph nodes that were swollen, they're still being labeled as mental problems. And this serves a very important purpose for the Veterans Administration. They're able to sort of deny any liability or any causation to the Gulf War by relieving it and saying it's just simply a mental problem. But what people don't know, is that we've sent at least 1.6 million troops to Iraq and Afghanistan, 1.6 million. So out of that now, we started out with 25% were mental problems, then we went up to 30%, then we went to 35%. Now we're around 40% of the troops that have gone to serve in this war have mental problems. Now, I would just ask anybody, is there anybody out there that thinks that 4 out of 10 people that we sent to Enduring Freedom or Iraqi Freedom all were head cases? I mean, of course not. I mean, these people are screened before they go into the military. They don't all of a sudden develop this major mental illness and come back crying and whining, I have a problem. Well, they're not crying and whining. They do have a problem, and they have an organic problem. So the Department of Defense found themselves having to underwrite this PTSD diagnosis. And the PTSD diagnosis being post-traumatic stress disorder, saying, oh, well, they had a problem with the war, so therefore they've developed a mental problem. They've developed drug dependence, or they've developed self-medication issues with marijuana and with alcohol or whatever. And they've needed SSRI drugs, so they're given the antipsychotic or drugs like Prozac, Cerazone, Celexa, Luvox, Wellbutrin, whatever. And then they're usually given Ambien for sleep. Many of them are put on a drug called Risperidone, which I personally have a real negative feeling toward that because I reviewed too many medical malpractice cases with Risperidone. But Risperidone and some of these other drugs that have caused significant problems in these troops to where they really couldn't function after that. Well, that was the mode of treatment, as you're probably aware very well of, Dr. Stan. That was the mode of treatment for these troops. They were given these drugs for PTSD. Well, then the Department of Defense found themselves holding the bag for too many PTSD diagnoses. They just couldn't pay for all of that. The compensation, which many cases was 100% compensation, got to be too burdensome. So the brilliance of the Department of Defense in deflecting their responsibility then decided to call it, they decided to change it and say, oh, it's not PTSD, it's personality disorder. Now, personality disorder is something that you probably had in your childhood because your dad beat you too much or your mother was an alcoholic. Now, that is a personality disorder, so they labeled these troops, instead of PTSD, well, they would find a reason to label them with personality disorder. Now, if you give a person enough psychiatric testing, you're going to be able to find something or read something into it. Now, let's say you were given, Dr. Stan or anybody was given a psychiatric test, and it says, do you think the government is trying to take away your rights? Well, I'd answer it yes. Well, there we go with paranoid ideation or paranoid delusion. So they would find something in the DSM-4, which is the Diagnostic Statistic Manual, which is the Bible of psychiatric diagnoses. They would find something to label these troops with. Then these troops would not be able to get any compensation whatsoever. Because that happened, your dad beat you before you went into the military. Now, isn't this a brilliant way of putting these troops out on the street and saying, sorry, troop, We have no responsibility over you. You're on your own. Now, I find this so egregious, so incredibly egregious to do this to these troops who literally believed in everything they were doing and now come back hurting, mostly with depleted uranium effects or vaccine effects from the anthrax vaccine, etc., and who knows what else they're being given now, and they're turned aside. And thus the book that was written, Waiting for an Army to Die, which is kind of what happens. It's so incredibly sad. So this is the way now they're deflecting the payment of anything to these troops, but the world doesn't know about this. Last night I was reading the Army Times, and it had a... they were questioning the military, and they had these pie charts about how many people think the war was of any value. And less than 50% believe the war should be fought. Less than 20% believe we're going to win it. About, I can't remember, 20% believe it's going to take at least 10 years over there. And then they ask about the anthrax vaccine, and 70% of the military people were against the anthrax vaccine. But the other 20% said, if you get an order, soldier, you better take the order, and you better do it. So these troops are now finding themselves taking this mandatory anthrax vaccine, which only creates more problems for them, along with the depleted uranium, and we are going to have a military that is quite ill before long. That is, if they keep them in there. Because if you notice now, something like one-third or one-fourth of them that served in Iraq are all but already being treated by the VA. Now, that means if they're going to the VA, they're no longer in the military. That means they had to get out, just like the Gulf War I troops did. And as I've often quoted, Senator Wellstone said that after the war in 1991, by 1995, about 80% of the military was out that served in Desert Storm. 80%. Which means we only had a bare-bones military of 20% subsequent to 1995. So the same thing is happening right now, but we don't know that. We don't know that because we're not being told that. Meanwhile, we have a group of military people that are being labeled as dangerous. The VA now, and I am aware of this, is attempting to label Gulf War veterans as terrorists. Now, I know this from the inside because I've seen some information that has been provided to me from, well, I'm not going to say which departments, but what I am seeing is a desire to want to list them as unstable and potential terrorists so that their weapons can be taken away. Now, in about 1999, the Veterans Benefit Agency, the VBA, started this thing of this program of removing weapons from veterans who had been adjudicated to be a mental problem. Now, like with all the definitions of the Department of Defense or the Department of Justice anymore, they don't identify or they don't define mental problem. So if you have been adjudicated to have a mental disorder and you're 100% disabled as a result of that mental disorder, not only can you not own a weapon, but nobody in your family can own a weapon either. And I have had veterans tell me that, you know, I was a sniper in Vietnam. I was told to go kill bad guys. And I killed bad guys, a lot of them. And he said, now my government has said, I can't even carry a weapon in my home to protect my family with. And he was in tears. He said, how can they do this to us?
Well, very simply, because they fear the veterans, knowing and being trained in military affairs, might somehow want to rise up against the oppressive government that seems to be so intent upon taking away not only their freedom, but the freedom of all Americans.
And so we now have another group of veterans who have become unstable. Now, the neurological problems related to depleted uranium are very real. The neurological problems from the first Gulf War. You know, you and I have talked over and over again about the presentation of a Gulf War veteran. They have loss of memory. They're confused. They have brain fog. They are violent. They have tempers they can't control. I know this one vet
Hold that, Joyce. We're just about to the break. We'll be right back.
Black Berkey purification elements are more powerful than any gravity filter element on the market. These awesome elements are used in Berkey purification systems, and they can also be used to upgrade most other gravity filtration. Systems. They can purify raw, untreated water by removing pathogenic bacteria, cysts, parasites, trihalomethanes, and chemicals such as chlorine, atrazine, styrene, and MTBE. These elements also reduce unwanted heavy metals such as lead, mercury, and aluminum. Unbelievably, they even remove small microparticulate from water like food coloring particles. Yet, they leave in the nutritional minerals that your body needs. Moreover, because they are recleanable, Black Berkey elements are more economical than the standard disposable elements, providing fresh, pure water for less than 2 cents per gallon.
Get a 2-pack for only $99 or a 4-pack for only $188 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438 or order on the web at berkeywater.com.
Hello, Ted Anderson. Listeners of the network are familiar with the Federal Reserve note and understand the risks of deficit spending. Therefore, with catastrophic events, it comes as no surprise that some banks have currently placed limits on the amount of cash depositors can remove from their accounts. A fractional reserve system means only a small portion of your deposit is held in reserve for immediate withdrawal. Deficit spending will skyrocket through FDIC if the government is forced to insure deposits during a bank run followed by a depressed economy. A current effort is underway by the Fed, along with other central banks, to increase liquidity for depositors. However, an increase in money supply without equal expansion in productivity can cause inflation. In order to achieve strength and stability, I recommend a conservative portion of all investments to be calmly repositioned into gold and silver. While paper investments currently have been driven by debt, gold on its own has held value for over 6,000 years. For more information, call 1-800-686-2237. That's 1-800-686-2237.
Some people believe a group of wealthy men control political parties, the American media, and the wealth of our nation. Is this true? Dr. Stanley Monteith spent 40 years studying secret societies and subversive movements. He lived in Africa for 3 years, and when he returned home, he studied the writings of the men who shaped the modern world. His book, Brotherhood of Darkness, identifies the people who control the world and the organizations they created. Dr. Monteith exposes the movement behind Rhodes scholarships, the origin of the Council on Foreign Relations, and the myths surrounding communism. He discusses the goal of all covert organizations, so if you read Brotherhood of Darkness, you will learn a secret that has been passed down through the centuries. When you learn this secret, you will understand what the future holds and what you must do to help preserve our nation. Call and order your copy. 877-300-7645. Only $12.95. That's 877-300-7695.
This is Elizabeth Border, author of the two books set, America Attacked and Chaos and Chemtrails. I wrote these books because I believe that every American should have the vital chemtrails research info. I was much heartened and encouraged when a radio listener recently wrote me, quote, "You are truly a great writer, so clear and powerful and thorough in your communication. You have the strength to forge ahead in the midst of darkness, and you also believe in the power of goodness and truth." I hope you listeners will order these crucial books. Send your check for $32 post-paid to Radio Liberty, P.O. Box 969, Soquel, S-O-Q-U-E-L, California, 95073. $32 to Radio Liberty, Box 969, Soquel, California, 95073. Or call 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927.
Stand back here, our guest, of course, is Joyce Riley, and she's talking about the tragic fate of so many of the young, courageous boys who went overseas to fight for freedom, really believing the lies that they'd been told, and then coming home ill, because, definitely because of what happened to them in the military, the use of depleted uranium, the use of vaccines, and perhaps other experiments, because you know they do experiment on our military men. They have for years. They use them as human guinea pigs and then cast them aside afterwards. And if you doubt that, you need to get what we call a Rockefeller Report. I know that that it's a report the Veterans Administration, 1994, came out over the name of Jay Rockefeller, and it just dealt with using the military for experimental guinea pigs. I think that I know that Joyce carries that report, as do we. You need to read it. You need to understand that these people are not imagining they're ill. They are ill. The first Gulf War illness was ill. What these boys are experiencing today, we're over a third of them within 3 months of returning from the theater from Iraq. Over a third of them are ill. So go ahead, pick up the story. And of course, Joyce is pointing out it's even a higher figure down the line. Go ahead, Joyce.
You know, I just want to reiterate what you said about that 1994 Rockefeller report. If you all have not seen that, I wish you'd get it from Dr. Stan and help support his ministry and while you do that, because I will tell you, Dr. Stan, I don't know if you know this or not, that is the report that changed my life.
Really?
Once I saw that, I said there's no turning back. No, there's no fear any longer, because I saw that statement that states, and it's on 103-97, which is the one he's talking about, during the past 50 years, hundreds of thousands of our military have been experimented upon without their knowledge or consent. I mean, I can still remember the day I saw that when I was living in Houston, Texas, and I read it and I reread it and I said, that can't be. It's a Senate Veterans Affairs report. It cannot be that they knew this and they continued to keep this going. So I would encourage everybody to get this, because there is no way anyone can ever deny any longer that they are not out to harm their military or use them as guinea pigs if they desire. Now, back to what I was saying about this veteran that contacted me, wrote me a letter, and he said, I don't know what has happened to me, Joyce, he said, because once I went to the Gulf War, he said, before I went to the Gulf War, I was fine. I was a normal human being. He said, and I didn't even see any battles. I didn't see any war. He said, I rode around in the sand in a buggy thing playing Nintendo. He said, I literally did not have any kind of PTSD. And he said, I came back after experiencing whatever I did, and I'm sure it was some chemical exposure somewhere. And he said, since that point, if I walk into a Walmart, he said, and somebody gets in front of me, he said, I want to tear their head off. He said, it takes everything I have to keep from trying to hurt someone. Now, think about this. We've taken a bunch of men who were normal beforehand. We bring them back, and as Donald Rumsfeld said, your men, as he said, and he quoted in Norfolk, Virginia, to the wives as their troops left on a ship, your man will not return the same as they left. I wish I had that clip, because I remember at the time I got goosebumps. I could not believe what I was hearing. Your men will not return the same as when they left.
But the thing is, Joyce, that they know what they're doing. These people in key positions, and there are very, very few of them, but they are in key positions, hate the military, hate America, and of course they want to destroy our military. Our military is effectively destroyed right now, and we are right. Actually, my December letter is the speech given by Lieutenant General Ricardo Sanchez, who commanded the coalition forces over there from June of 2003 to June of 2004, and he says, I mean, our military has been effectively destroyed. It'll take 10 years to build our military back up again. And, of course, you weren't told these things after he gave this public speech. Go ahead.
That's right. And when you think about it, you know, they released about six or eight months ago, they released a statement that we have now taken 60% of Baghdad. Wait a second. A war that began in 2003, the most powerful army in the world, has now taken 60% of one town? I mean, this is so by design. And we had Inar Muhammad on our program from Iraq, and when she talked about how things were now versus then, she was an architect in Baghdad. She was a very wealthy young lady, did very well until the war came. And now, she said, we only have a few hours of electricity a day. It's been that way for years. And she said, We had no sectarian violence. She said, my mom was Sunni, my dad was Shiite. There was no problem. Nobody cared. Until the United States military came, and then all of a sudden there was a division that we had never seen before.
Hold that thought right there.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Now you can enjoy the most delicious, freshest, and healthiest drinking water anytime, even while traveling, during outdoor sporting activities, and in hospital filtration environments such as local or national emergencies. The revolutionary Berkey Light removes pathogenic bacteria, cysts, parasites, and harmful or unwanted chemicals to below detectable levels. It also removes foul tastes and odors like that rotten egg smell of sulfide, and it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving in the healthful and nutritional minerals your body needs. The Berkey Light is so powerful it can purify raw, untreated water from remote lakes, streams, and stagnant ponds. The Berkey Light is transparent and glows in the dark with its rechargeable LED lighting system, so it can be used as a night light or camp light.
Get the Berkey Light Purifier for only $279. Call New Millennium 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438, or order on the web at berkeywater.com. Not yet available in Iowa.
Hi, this is Brother Michael Diamond. You can now get the most important package ever on what has happened to the Catholic Church in the last 50 years. Find out how this massive crisis concerning the Catholic Church happened, what happened, and how the Bible predicted it would take place in the last days. The package contains 6 DVDs that contain 10 different programs, 2 books that combined are over 1,000 pages and other information. Order now at our website, mostholyfamilymonastery.com. That's mostholyfamilymonastery.com. The last word monastery is spelled M-O-N-A-S-T-E-R-Y. Or call us at 1-800-275-1126. That's 1-800-275-1126. Or mail in your order to us at 4425 Schneider Road, Fillmore, New York 14735. The total cost for this massive package of information is only $10, $15 for UPS Ground, or $30 outside the U.S.
It's a fact. Since the creation of the Federal Reserve in 1913, all banks in these United States create money out of thin air for every single loan they issue. With never-ending late fees, over-the-limit fees, and higher interest rates, it has become mathematically impossible to repay all debt, making all of us slaves to our creditors. The Federal Debt Relief System has created a successful attorney-backed program to legally eliminate credit card debt, personal loans, lines of credit, and other unsecured debts which have been fraudulently created by the banks. We can terminate your unsecured debt within 18 months with a much lower monthly payment, ending with nothing on your credit report. Join the thousands of Americans who now breathe with a sigh of relief because they have legally eliminated their debt. Instead of living each day in fear and frustration, it's time to take action and turn your life around. Call the Federal Debt Relief System at 877-943-8600. That's 877-943-8600. Or visit FDRS.org. Find out how you can break the cycle of debt slavery. Visit FDRS.org today.
Dr. Stan back here at the Genesis Communication Network, and our guest is Joyce Riley. We've interviewed Doug Rocky, Major Doug Rocky, who I know Joyce certainly knows very well. In fact, she did a wonderful film, Beyond Treason, with Doug Rocky, where he was, as far as I was concerned, he was the star of that DVD.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, he was telling me that almost 80,000 of the 695,000 men that we had sent to the Gulf, you know, and could come back, of course, because we only lost about 100 cases there, about 100 people, but almost 80,000 of them were dead, according to the Veterans Administration. And I was a little upset at that, and I asked him to verify it for me, so he told me how to get onto the Veterans Administration webpage and go to their division where they actually talked about this. And sure enough, it's almost 80,000 of those original 695,000 boys who went over to fight for freedom in the first Gulf War. Almost 80,000 of them are no longer living. And we actually have those pages. I pull them out and copy them because it's so hard to believe that that could be going on, and Rush Limbaugh wouldn't tell us.
Well, you know,
why did they die?
Let me just explain. That figure is even worse than is on that form, and I've seen that. But let me tell you why it's worse. That's only active duty troops on there.
Right.
Now, how many people do we have that serve in the reserves in the military? About 50% of them are reservists. So think about that. If that only tracks active duty people and the reservists who died are not on there, then we have an even higher figure, probably up around 120,000. So that is a real concern, is the death rate versus the amount of time during the war, a 100-hour war. We had 160 deaths, and half of those were friendly fire. And so now we look at this incredible amount of lives that have been destroyed. Example here in the U.K., because it's not just a U.S. problem. In the U.K., we've got people that are literally going ballistic. I mean, they're going emotionally off the scale of what would be normal for a person to even consider doing. And I've been following some of these people. I just returned from visiting one troop that was in prison. And I went there with his attorney, visited this young man who is convicted or going to be convicted and possibly on death row. We don't know what the sentencing is going to be. However, this is happening all over. In fact, in the UK, this is a story of a gentleman, Gulf War veteran, who David Bradley is his name, who slid into despair and self-loathing, they said, after leaving the Army. Now, he's the typical kind of guy we were talking about, if there is a typical situation, who left the military in 1995, only he was in the UK at the time, not in the US. He became jaded and weird, they say. And he went to his family, who, by the way, had taken him in at 16 because he came from a very unstable family and a mother that didn't want him. And this family adopted him at 16. It was an amazing thing. And he decided that he was going to shoot each one of them. And he did. He went and killed them separately. And then he went to the police station and said, "I just killed my family." Now, this is the one thing that we're finding about these situations that is so similar, Dr. Stan, is that they go to the police or they call 911 and they say, I think that I just killed my family because they're dead here and there's nobody else here and I think I must have done it. Now, see, that is so outside of the normal kind of a manner that we would see a murder committed. I mean, somebody commits a murder, they run, they leave, they try to get away with it. These guys are all saying, "I must have done it." And so this troop that was in the prison that I went to visit, I wanted to go and see what their story was. I wanted to know. I'd read all the police reports, the investigations that had taken place. And I wanted to see. I had read probably a foot tall of documentation from the attorney first. And Dr. Stan, it breaks my heart. This guy had never in his life even so much as said a swear word. Never had an argument with his wife. Never had a problem with anybody. And he all of a sudden lost it and killed both his wife and his child. And his child, he loved more than life itself. Then, after he did it, he didn't know that he had done it. And this is what is so scary, so frightening, is that we're now noticing that there are the amount of homicides and suicides that are totally off the scale. Although Bill O'Reilly has said, "Oh, I can't believe this. This is so untrue. How can anybody talk about our military? They must hate our military." No, it is off the scale with Gulf War veterans because these guys had never so much as spit on the sidewalk before. And if I were to go on George Norrie or Coast to Coast, whatever, and talk about this, I would scare the living daylights out of every parent, every spouse, every child of a Gulf War veteran. Because the potential is there with the neurological problems, both from the first Gulf War and the second Gulf War. So I predict we have a problem staring us in the face right now that is going to be larger than anything that we have ever seen before. And I am incredibly reserved about talking about this. But yet I do think that it needs to be addressed, and I do think that people need to be alerted to this because there's going to be some changes and there's going to be some families that are going to be devastated in the near future.
Well, I share your concern, Joyce, and I think that all we can do right now is to try to get the American people to understand that there really are people at the highest levels of the government who want to destroy our military, and they're doing a pretty good job of it. But these young men should not have to have been guinea pigs. They should not be being destroyed intentionally because, of course, this is a very real disease, and it certainly is not post-traumatic stress. I mean, we need to study this thoroughly. We know that the first Gulf War illness was a very real organic condition, probably related to some sort of an autoimmune response. And we're certain that the second one is as well. But until the American people demand something be done, nothing is going to be done. The Veterans Administration is going to sweep it under the rug. These guys are going to go back again and again to try to get some sort of a disability rating, and they may get a few dollars out of it, but their lives have been destroyed. And until people really understand what this report, it's a government report, came out of the Veterans Administration in 1994, talks about how hundreds of thousands of our servicemen have been experimented on, that if they did it before, why would we think they're not doing it today? Certainly, as Henry Kissinger has said, our military is simply stupid, dumb animals to be used for foreign policy purposes. And that quotation you'll find in the book, The Final Days by Woodward and Bernstein. If you want the page, I can get it for you. That's Henry Kissinger, talking about our military, and if they take that attitude, why should we be surprised when they are effectively destroying them and destroying the lives of so many young people? And if any of you would like to see that, those pages from the Veterans Administration, we copied them before they disappeared. They probably are still up there, but nobody could find them. But we have them, and we'll send them to you. Over, at least the figures that we have, over almost 80,000 of the original 695,000, that's over 10% of the boys who went to the first Gulf War, are no longer living. Frightening, frightening figures. Go ahead, Joyce.
It really is. And you think of let's look at the numbers of people that have been devastated as a result of this. Because I talk to the parents, I talk to the grandparents, I talk to the sons, the daughters, the nieces, the nephews, the spouses. And let's say there were 100,000 people. Well, we now know that there's 250,000 plus that have been disabled as a result of the Persian Gulf War that are on compensation now. So let's say just 250,000. And you take that number, which is a small number in my opinion, and you add to that the family members, and you say each person has maybe 6 family members or whatever. Look at the huge number just in the first Gulf War alone. Then you take the second Gulf War, and you take the 400,000 there, and add their family members. We're looking at people that have been devastated beyond what we can imagine. And why is it that 50% of all homeless are veterans? You know, we say that just kind of glibly. Oh, yeah, that's a statistic. Well, if we were to say 50% of all homeless people are orthopedic surgeons, we would say, man, what kind of metal are they working with in those screws? Or we would try to find some correlation. But no, if they're homeless, we just say, oh, well, 50% are veterans, and let it go at that. Just like, oh, well, there's too much mercury in tuna. But we don't address the reason why. Or, gee, men are having problems with erectile dysfunction, and we don't ask the question why. So this idea that we can just take these veterans and kick them to the side of the curb it has become so prevalent in our society that I don't think that people understand. You know, it's right there in plain sight. They're not seeing it. They're not realizing. They're not understanding it. And we're not going to be prepared to deal with it when they return. Just as that one troop that I was telling you, David Radley, went in and shot 4 of his family members and then went to the police. I could give you story after story, and I really don't even want to deal with that because it is so horrific. It is so horrible. But maybe that's what we're going to have to do to get people to understand that this is a problem everywhere. It's anybody that could potentially have this problem. And I've known one of them personally myself. In fact, the one troop that I knew, his last name was Hutchinson. And he was in Gulf War Illness, Fact or Fiction. Do you remember the first documentary that I did, Dr. Stan?
No, I really don't.
Gulf War Illness, Fact or Fiction is one the Department of Defense called me personally and asked me not to distribute it. And Captain Chalker Brown called me from the DOD, and he was Navy Captain Chalker Brown, and he said, I would like to tell you, Ms. Riley, that the Department of Defense is telling you to stop distributing Gulf War Illness Factor fiction. And I said, oh, really? I said, and what is the reason? What part of it is incorrect? And he said, that's not it. We don't want you distributing it. I've been giving it away to veterans, just kind of the way we give away Beyond Treason. Because if you're a vet and you would like a copy of it, we'll give it to you at no charge. So he said, and I said, now why do you want me to stop distributing Gulf War Illness Factor fiction? And he said, that's because you're one of us. And I said, no, sir, I am not one of you. I said, if you think that I am going to participate in the wholesale murder of our military, as you are doing right now, I said, count me out. And he said, but you're a captain in the Air Force. And I said, that doesn't mean that I'm going to lie, cheat, and steal for the Air Force. It means that I am going to stand up for the truth, and the truth is you are covering up the illnesses and deaths of our military. So Gulf War Illness Factor fiction, in it, there is a troop there named Hutchinson. Last name is Hutchinson. And he was a Persian Gulf War veteran, Jeffrey Hutchinson. He's a former Army Ranger. And in the video, you will see him asking Dr. Garth Nicholson for some help. And he was, and Dr. Baumschweiger, he was asking him for some help, who was at the VA at the time. Jeffrey was turned down for any help, and he kept saying, there's something wrong with me, there's something wrong with me. Well, lo and behold, he was in Washington State at the time, and he goes down to Florida to live, and his girlfriend, who he was engaged to, happened to be the mail carrier for Dave's father, Dave Von Kleist, my husband. And so Renee was her name, Flaherty, and she had children, Jeff 9, Amanda 7, and Logan 4. Well, unbeknownst to anybody, he was, whatever happened, he killed her and those three children. He loved that girl, Renee. They never had a problem. And he shot her one day and all of the children. And the only reason we found out about this was because she was Dave's dad's mail carrier. And the story is that I received from, I believe one of the attorneys, was that he had called the police, called 911, and was one of those stories where he said, I think I must have killed them. They're dead, and I'm the only one here. Now, Jeffrey Hutchinson, I was in his home. He was an incredible guy, wonderful guy. He would never harm anyone. But these are the kinds of things that are happening to people who have been experimented upon or used and then cast aside. But you see, it's going to affect all of us in some way, someday. So what the answer is, I don't know, because there's certainly not going to be any attention given by the media, and there's certainly more and more devastation coming out of Iraq and Afghanistan right now. I mean, the A-10 aircraft, which fires 4,000 rounds of depleted uranium bullets per minute, 4,000 rounds. Now, we used to talk about this, Dr. Stan, 3 years ago, how bad the DU was. Think about how bad it is in Iraq right now, which is why, you know, people the generals who are in charge over there spend so much time in the U.S. They know full well what that's all about, and they don't want to get any more contaminated than they need to be. So the sad part is we are now sitting here with this ticking time bomb, not knowing what's going to happen. And I'm communicating with three veterans right now that are in prison who are serving life sentences. There's no chance of parole. They're not talking to me because they want some kind of defense. They want to stop this from happening in some other case. They simply are saying, please help me to stop this now and to keep some other veteran from shooting and killing his children. Now, that's a pretty sad state of affairs when you have to look at this kind of a story in this country today, when you've got people like, and that's why I started out with John McCain. That man does not care about veterans' rights or issues. He cares that he looks good and looks like he is a veteran advocate, which he is anything but. And so in this war, I only see, this war, this political race, I only see one person that's really been supporting the veterans that I've talked to, and of course that's Ron Paul, that I spent time, you know, able to discuss with him the Gulf War illness. I'm saddened, incredibly saddened to see where we're headed. Not where we are, but where we're headed.
And with more and more and more of our young men, of course, having their lives destroyed. And if you want to support the veterans, you get them out of there because they are not being allowed to win the war. They've never been allowed to win the war. It's just like the no-win war in Vietnam, like the no-win war in Korea. If you want to support the veterans, don't pick up the line of the establishment, oh, my goodness, if we pull out, there's going to be chaos. There is chaos because we're there. And there's going to be chaos until we leave, and they're planning at least 10 more years and perhaps indefinitely.
At least 10 more years, because that's the whole idea behind this war, is to keep it going and suck all the money from the bureaucratic system that they can, or from the defense system that they can. And so I am very concerned that, you know, we've had troops that when they go over to Iraq, they are ordering things like colloidal silver, super silver. They're ordering super silver. They're ordering charcoal. It's amazing how many of them take charcoal on a daily basis in an attempt to try and keep their systems as clear as possible.
Hey, we're out of time, Joyce. God bless you. Thank you so very much for everything, and thanks for everything you're doing for men.
Thank you, Dr.
Bye-bye.
Stan.
God bless.
Terrorism, chemical attacks, dirty bombs, fallout, biological attack, anthrax, and to top it all off, duct tape and plastic. Alarming words for our time. But how do you protect your family during such a crisis? The video Sheltering in Place, Surviving Acts of Terrorism from Biological, Chemical, and Radioactive Fallout was developed by Wayne LeBaron, a health physicist who has served as a specialist in environmental health, communicable diseases, and has worked as a nuclear specialist for the U.S. government. Anyone can follow the simple instructions. It's presented by a housewife as they walk you step by step through the process of preparing your home as a shelter. If you're not the type who waits till it's too late, then you need the video Sheltering in Place. Get the critical information you need now for only $29 plus shipping by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438 and tell them Alex Jones sent you. That's 888-803-4438 or order on the web at murkywater.com.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Each night when you sleep, your body uses the time to restore itself so that you could wake up feeling renewed. But wouldn't it be nice to also wake up looking younger? Now there's Night Skin, a serum that goes on while you sleep to reduce age spots, reduce the appearance of wrinkles, and moisturize the skin. Night Skin was made by Dr. Arthur Perry, a board-certified cosmetic surgeon, as an alternative to some invasive surgeries. It has real ingredients that have been shown to reduce the signs of aging and fight natural sun damage, all while you get a good night's sleep. Try Night Skin today and see what it's like to wake up feeling renewed, both inside and out.
Try Night Skin risk-free by calling 1-800-457-9914. Night Skin is guaranteed to renew your skin overnight. Turning back the clock has never been this easy. Try Night Skin risk-free today. Dial 1-800-457-9914. That's 1-800-457-9914.
Well, Dr. Dr. Stan, and let me suggest that there are certain things you need to get. You need to get the Rockefeller Committee report. I talked personally to the people in the printing office, the U.S. printing office. They only prepared 35 of these for the general population. They provided them for the people on the Veterans Committee, but when I asked them why they'd only provided 35 of this copies of this very important committee report for the entire population of, you know, almost 300 million. The fellow said, oh, they're so expensive to reprint. Well, of course, we reprint it here. We have it, and Joyce has it as well. But you need to get the Rockefeller Committee report. It's only $9.95. And then you need to get Joyce's DVD, Beyond Treason. It's about depleted uranium. And when you get it, you get a CD-ROM. And on that, there are literally a thousand or more pages of documentation of depleted uranium from the government's own sources. Why don't we hear about this, you know, here in the... in America? Well, because the media is controlled, and they don't want you to understand that they're poisoning not only our troops, but the civilians over there in Iraq as well. And then, of course, we have a four-tape set on the Gulf War illness. We have a four-tape set on depleted uranium. And I have a talk, which is either in video or DVD, called Iraq, the Untold Story. And you certainly want to get the syllabus with that, because it's got all this documentation of all of the wars, because it's really the story of all of the wars of the last century, and concluding with why we're really in Iraq. And, of course, there's a reason that has nothing to do with anything you've ever been told. It's all about this dream of the New World Order, the New World Religion, the New World Leader, and the powerful occult forces behind that. We put together a great new little pamphlet, and the pamphlets are only $3.95 plus shipping. This is called The True Story of 9/11. You need to know why we went to war with Iraq. I mean, what really happened on 9/11? Why did we go to war with Afghanistan? Well, we went there to get Osama bin Laden, but he's not there, so why are we still fighting in Afghanistan? Have you ever asked yourself that? You have to understand you're never being told the truth. So the true story of 9/11 is important, and then we have three pamphlets together that's called Foreknowledge 9/11. And so we suggest you get all of this, the compilations of our newsletters, which you can go up on the Internet and read, but I love to have the little pamphlets handy, and so will you. And then, of course, we do hope that many of you will want to get into an understanding of what this is really all about. Because there's a force behind the force behind the force, and that force is a spiritual force, and that's why you need to get my talk on the forbidden secret. There is a secret that's been passed down for 5,000 years through the secret societies and through the Kabbalah and through the Gnostics and through the Templars and through the Rosicrucians and right up to modern-day Masonry, and we tell you that secret. And then, of course, you'll want to get the four-tape set, four-tape or four-CD set, the secret behind the secret. You want to get the very professional DVD, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginnings, and the sequel to that, Riddles in Stone, The Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital. And, of course, they were both produced by a man named Chris Pinto, a friend of ours, and you want to get his talk on, and we have this on DVD, The Atlantis Connection. And you may say, what does Atlantis have to do with anything? It has everything to do with it, because it has been the belief of those people who are involved with the occult and the secret societies that one day America would become the new Atlantis and lead the whole world into this one world government and with the one world religion and the one world leader. And of course, that is exactly what's going on today. The United States spends more money on its military than all the rest of the countries in the world put together. More money on our military than all the rest of the world put together. And, of course, they're using our financial, our military power to bring about this world government and eventually enslave our people and the people of the world and then eliminate the vast majority of them. We'll be back here in just a moment to wrap for the next hour here at Radio Liberty.
More than 700 chemicals have been found in our drinking water. And did you know that you can have greater exposure to these chemicals by taking hot showers than when you drink the water? That's because many chemicals are inhaled when they evaporate, and others are absorbed through the skin.
The KDF shower filter is designed to reduce chlorine, lead, mercury, and iron, and it inhibits the growth of bacteria, mold, algae, and fungus in your shower. The media is non-toxic, environmentally sound, and is recyclable. The KDF shower filter will typically last 10,000 gallons or 1 year, whichever comes first. Hospitals, restaurants, and water treatment facilities use this media to reduce chlorine, iron, heavy metals, and bacteria. What about you? Order your KDF shower filter, normally $49, for our special price of only $35, a $14 savings. Call now to order at 1-888-803-4255.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and of course, they're going to be the views of Don Goldwater for the next hour. And Don is with the Minutemen Group. And so, hi, Don. Thank you so very much for being with us today.
Hi, Dr. Stan, and hello to everybody in Monterey. I spent a few years up there with the Robert Louis Stevenson School, and thoroughly love that area up there. You got great produce, good artichokes, and good people.
Well, yeah, they certainly were the artichoke capital of the world over there in Castroville, and certainly the Robert Louis Stevenson School was a great school. So you got a good education. Was it fairly conservative education?
I believe that over at RLS it was kind of across the board, because we had people from all the way around the world, a lot of kids from South Africa as well as England, and it was good to get different perspectives from different groups.
What years were you there?
I was there in the early 70s, 70 through 72.
I was asked actually to talk over there one time about the Iraq War at the time, but I'm sure you probably didn't hear it. Anyway, are you working on this issue of illegal immigration at the present time?
Yes, sir, we are. With the Minutemen organization, we're continuing to be down at the border to identify people coming across the border illegally, identify them to the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency. And then I am also running two initiatives on the 2008 ballot. One is the Legal Arizona Workers Initiative that basically states that all employers have to use the e-verification system to determine if the people they're hiring are legally here in the United States. And if an employer is found to have knowingly hired an illegal alien and is prosecuted for knowingly hiring an illegal alien, they lose their ability to do business in the state of Arizona for good.
All right, fine. I think that's a great idea. And of course, the problems that we have with illegal immigration would not be problems if we were just to enforce the existing laws. But Arizona, I think, has more problems than the rest of us. So what's the other initiative you're going to be pushing?
The other one is called SOL. It's Support Our Law Enforcement. And essentially what it is it eliminates sanctuary policies by cities. Right now, for example, Phoenix, Arizona has a policy 1.4.3 that tells its police officers not to waste assets on illegal aliens. So if they pull over a van load of people who cannot speak English, who have no identification, no driver's license, no insurance, they can't ask them where they're from. As a matter of fact, they can't even detain them at this point in time. They let them go.
Well, wait a minute now. If they don't have any driver's license or insurance, they shouldn't be on the road. So why not just impound the car?
Well, they're not allowed to.
I see. Well, of course, here once again is an example of how it is that government agencies are being used to encourage illegal immigration. And instead of doing what is logical, they want to create the problem. And out of that problem, of course, will come a solution that, of course, will eventually undermine even further the sovereignty of our nation. So What are the chances you're going to be able to get those two things through?
We think they're going to be very good. The last three initiatives on illegal immigration that were put on the ballot the last time around, the weakest one passed by over 75%, and you know what? Over 50% of the Hispanic population in Arizona voted for those initiatives.
Yeah, well, of course, you know, I think most of the Hispanic population, those who are here legally, certainly don't want the illegals coming in and taking away their jobs, and a lot of them love America just as much as we do. A lot of them have been here for generations, and so, you know, I think that that's really great, and I applaud you what you're doing. We're going to be back in just a moment with Don Goldwater. And we're going to be talking certainly about the problems that face Arizona, the problems that face our nation, as our leaders have an entirely different agenda. Well, Don, you go ahead and pick up the story there. Are you getting any opposition to these initiatives you're trying to put on?
Oh, yes.
Wait a minute, I'm sorry. We just actually brought some other stations on board, so I want to introduce you. This is Don Goldwater, is our guest this afternoon. And are you related to the famous Barry Goldwater?
Barry Goldwater was my uncle, yes.
All right, fine. Well, of course, you come from a good lineage then. And Don is with the Minutemen, and he's, of course, dedicated to trying to do something about illegal immigration. And, of course, for our listeners out there, you must understand that the only reason illegal immigration is a problem is because it is being actively encouraged by people in our government. Why? Because they have no loyalty to America. They want to destroy our sovereignty, merge us with Mexico. They're globalists. And, of course, their loyalty is not to the United States, but this globalist dream of a one-world government, a one-world religion, and a one-world leader. And, of course, some of the richest and wealthiest people in our country are behind this. And, of course, organizations like the Ford Foundation and even your own government are actually financing the organizations for illegal immigrants.
Well, very much so.
Go ahead. You pick up the story there, Don.
Well, you know, when you start talking about groups like the Ford Foundation, who are giving hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, to groups like La Raza, whose sole purpose is to take back the Southwest and give it back to, quote, Mexico. Let's start on a couple of premises right off the bat.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Illegal immigration, what drives it? The color of illegal immigration is green. It's not about any one group. It's not about Hispanics or Chinese, because every nation in the world is well represented in the United States by illegal immigration. You know, we have what amounts to today 21st century slavery, with the businesses that are hiring illegal immigrants for substandard pay, for substandard conditions, and when the illegals have absolutely no right to say anything, and if they do, they're either deported, thrown in jail, or thrown out on the street because the business is just going to go out and get another illegal alien to take that job. So, first off, I would love businesses to come with me down to the border. I'd like to have them sit a shift with me down on the border in August. And I want them to see the kind of condition that these people who are coming across our deserts are in by the time they get to the Minutemen. Because when they finally find us out there, they're grateful because they're darn near dead. You know, you have the heat index that you keep talking about for years and years, and that was the heat of the day combined with the humidity of the day, how miserable the day would be. We have an illegal alien index
in Arizona. Hold that thought right there. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Don. This is Dr. Stan. This is Dr. Stan, and certainly Don believes that the primary motivation is monetary, and the employers want to be able to hire cheap labor, and I'm sure that a lot of them do. And he's talking about, of course, if you go down to the border with him and sitting there watching the people coming across the border out of the desert there, and it's hot and it's dry, and a lot of these people are on the verge of exhaustion and certainly almost on the verge of death by the time they get into America, desperate to get in here because of the terrible conditions in Mexico, largely created by the NAFTA program, the NAFTA agreement we signed, which, of course, forced Mexico to open its borders to our subsidized corn, and believe me, the average Mexican farmer can't compete with subsidized corn from North America, from the United States. So in poverty and from hunger, they're driven across our border. We created the problem on one hand, and of course, we're not going to solve it. So go right ahead, Don.
Well, what I was saying is you have the heat index of the day where, you know, you combine the humidity and the heat, and that tells you how miserable the day is. We have an illegal and alien index when it comes to summer in Arizona, and that is, depending on the heat of the day, how many illegal aliens we're going to find that are dead in the desert. This stuff's got to stop. Business has got to realize that they are providing the demand to drive these people in here so that they can make a living. Anybody who comes into the front door of this country through the immigration process, you know, I respect any person that goes through the citizenship and to work to become a citizen of the United States. My hat is off to those people, and God bless them for coming, because that's what made our country great. But we can no longer continue to turn a blind eye to people who believe that the only way that they can make a profit, a living in the United States of America, the greatest country with the most possibilities, the most chances to make good of yourself. These companies that believe that the only way that they can do it is to break the law, to thumb the nose at the American people, and to spit in the face of the Constitution of the United States, these people need to be shut down. Move them to South America. I don't care.
All right, certainly if we enforce the laws that we have, we wouldn't have a problem. But why is it that the Ford Foundation is funding groups like La Raza and Maldave and LULAC and all of these other organizations for illegal immigration? Why would you have organizations for illegal immigration being funded by some of the biggest foundations in America?
I don't know. I don't see the logic in it. I don't see where it's beneficial to the Ford Foundation to sponsor organizations that want the downfall of the United States of America.
Amen to that. Well, of course, there is a reason, but it certainly isn't logical. So go ahead and pick up your story there, Don.
Well, so the point is what we're doing down here is the United States government will not uphold the laws that were put into place in 1986. So if the United States government is not willing to secure the border, if they're not willing to go after businesses who violate the law or go after sanctuary cities, it is up to the people of the United States to do it state by state by state. And it's growing. We're working with groups like grassfire.org, ALIPAC. We're working with Numbers USA. We're working with the Minutemen Civil Defense Corps, other groups, groups like You Don't Speak For Me, Hispanic organizations, to get these bills passed, because we want our border secured. We want our cities and towns safe.
And, of course, the thing is that the government officials absolutely refuse. They lied to the people. They told us we were going to build a fence, you know, we're going to build this fence, 800-mile fence, and they've refused to build it. How much of that fence do they have in? Do you have any idea, Don?
I've got about 5 miles of the fence.
5 miles of the, and they've got the money for it.
They don't. And this is the interesting thing about this. There were two bills that were passed in 2006 and 2005 and 2006. One was to fund fencing for 300 miles of fence, and another one was to build the fence for 700 miles. Well, the 700 additional miles, they never passed the appropriations to build that fence. And not many people understand that. The additional 700 miles of fence they never paid for it. So there was no way that was going to be paid for or done. Now Kay Bailey Hutchinson has put a bill through on appropriations that removes the funding for the first 300 miles of fence in the United States. So there is no funding for a border fence at this point in time.
In fact, she really, I think there was a stipulation there that it was going to be sort of left up to Michael Chertoff, and of course Michael Chertoff has no intention at all of building that fence. All he wants is every American to have an ID card, because that's how we're going to stop terrorism and illegal immigration, is to have every American have an ID card.
But let me say, hold on to your hat, because there's another thing that's very, very interesting. If there's no funding to build the fence, and the fence is not being built, then why are private landowners along the borders of Mexico and the United States, why are they in court with the federal government because the federal government is trying to condemn the land along the border, and the private landowners don't want it.
All right. Well, can you answer that question? You've asked a question. Do you have an answer for it?
No, I don't at this point in time. I think it has to do with the NAU. I think it has to do with the Trans Corridor. I think it has to do with a lot of things of that nature. But it doesn't make sense to me that this land, these strips of land that they want to put, quote, the fence on, if they're not going to build the fence, why are they trying to take the property through condemnation from private sector?
Well, I'm sure that there's an ulterior purpose, and it'll become obvious after a while. But I think it's so very important that our listeners know that basically we had, of course, 1965, we had a sweeping immigration laws that changed all of the laws of this country from the way they had been to the way they are today. And then in 1986, there was a renewal of that immigration debate, and Ronald Reagan swore to the American people. Ronald Reagan gave his word. That we would simply give amnesty to the 1 million people who were here illegally at that time. Then we'd begin, of course, enforcing the laws, going after the employers, guarding the border, and doing the logical things to stop immigration. And, of course, it wasn't 1 million illegals. It was about 2.5 million illegals who then suddenly became legal at that time. But the government promised that they would enforce the laws, and they've steadfastly refused. There were more laws passed in 1996, and they've refused to enforce those. So why would isn't it up to the government to enforce the laws, or are they very selective and are simply this whole immigration issue is being used for some other purpose?
Well, and I think you're asking some great questions there. And what's exciting about this whole issue? There's two things that's very exciting about this issue in one aspect. The first one, and I'll just point it out, that's the Internet. It used to be that Congress held all the information of what was going on in Washington, D.C., and the congressmen would choose when they would allow that information out to their constituents when they got home. 20 years ago, if the 2007 Comprehensive Immigration Bill was before Congress to be passed, you and I would not have known about it until months after that bill had been passed, if they chose to tell us at all. Today, with the advent of the Internet, you and I know what's going on in Washington, D.C., in committee hearings on the Capitol Hill and the White House, usually before it gets printed on the page, and we have a chance to react to it. The American people, for so long, have been told that, hey, you know what, your vote doesn't count. Hey, you know what? I'm a congressman. I know better than you. Doesn't matter if I'm conservative, independent, libertarian, or whatever. I'm a congressman. I can lead your life better for you. You need to rely on me. For so long, the American people have been beaten down to the very essence of what this country was founded on. If you go back to the 1786 and 1787 Constitutional Convention, there were two different groups at that convention. There was the, There was one group, the Federalists, who believed that we should have a strong national government. Our government should be along the lines of the way Great Britain ruled her government. You had the Anti-Federalists, who today what I call the conservatives, who believed in states' rights. And the fight was on. The only reason we got a constitution is because the Anti-Federalists won in getting the Bill of Rights attacked on inside the Constitution, and it's that Bill of Rights that makes our government far different than any other government in the history of the world. For years, governments were predicated on the fact that the leader of the government, the king, the emperor, whatever, was the direct descendant of God, and that people got their rights through the emperor or the king. Our government says that the main role of government is to protect the rights of the people, and that the people are the power, and it is from the people to the leaders, not from the leaders to the people. And you are seeing a resurrection of people believing that this is their government, that this is their country, and by God, if Washington, D.C. will not wake up and represent the people of the United States, the people of the United States will take power to represent themselves.
And, of course, that is the beauty of the state initiative process. Unfortunately, of course, as we found here in California with Prop 187, The people voted overwhelmingly for an excellent immigration law, maybe 10 years ago, and then the courts came along, and one liberal federal judge was able to block 187 until such time as Gray Davis came in, and of course Gray Davis, being a liberal Democrat who did not believe in immigration control, he was welcoming people coming into this country from Mexico, and of course then being able to use our welfare benefits and our school benefits and our health benefits, and of course it's still the law of California. But isn't it interesting that Arnold Schwarzenegger has never tried to enforce it or appeal that to the Supreme Court? So you have to understand, and I'm sure you've thought of this as well, Don, you'll get that initiative through, and then you're going to have to figure that the next thing is they're going to bring in a federal judge who's going to say, doesn't matter what the people want, I am the law. After all, I have decided. Well, we're going to be back in just a moment with Don Goldwater, who's running two initiatives at the present time, connecting signatures for the initiatives that are going to be in Arizona, and I think they both sound like a great idea. Well, Donald, why don't you go right ahead?
Okay. You know, you were talking about the issue with California and the initiatives and the issues of federal judges coming in and overturning your initiatives. And that's exactly what we want here in the state of Arizona. Right now we have the Fair Employment Act, which is basically our initiative, that has been challenged in the courts. And we want the initiatives to be challenged in the courts. We want them to go to the appellate division. We want these laws to go all the way up to the Supreme Court, because this is the question that the Supreme Court has to answer when it comes to the current law that's being attacked and the initiative that we're running. And that is, in a state, does the state have the right to demand of its businesses that they follow the law in order to get a state license? And if a business does not follow the law, does the state have the right to pull a state license from that business entity?
But of course, the trouble is that we have a situation where we have nine people wearing black robes, and many of them do not believe in the Constitution. They do not believe in freedom. They're dedicated to the internationalist dream, as Ruth Bader Ginsburg is, and Stephen Breyer and the others. And it's sort of, in fact, they many times will go to other countries to get ideas on how they should be voting on issues that are coming before them having to do with our Constitution. So can you really trust the people on the Supreme Court to do what's right? We've seen how they've taken God and prayer out of our schools, how they found a woman had a right to have an abortion, how they've legalized pornography for all intents and purposes. Can we trust those judges? And I don't think we can. Not until the American people, of course, have a voice, and we have people there who believe in the Constitution and will uphold the oath that they swear to uphold the Constitution and to defend it against all enemies, foreign and domestic, even if they're wearing black robes and sitting in the Supreme Court.
No, and I agree with you 100%. And no, I'm not going to sit here and say that I trust people to do, you know, well, people are going to do what they're going to do, and that's what I will trust them to do. But it's up to you and me. And if it gets to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court says that, water is not wet, and we all sit here and shake our heads, then it's up to us to elect leaders that will appoint judges that are constructionists, that don't believe in revising the Constitution, that believe in the United States. We got into this mess. It's taken, 20, 30, 40, 50 years to finally hit this level of the mess that we've made for ourselves. And we've got to dig in, we've got to grab the shovel, we've got to put on our hard hats, we've got to put on our gloves and our work boots, and we've got to take this country back. And we're going to take it back one city at a time, take it back one school at a time, take it back one college and one employer at a time. Because that's how we gave it up. We didn't just wake up 50 years ago and say, you know what, screw the Constitution, we don't need it. We slowly let people erode our freedoms away because we didn't pay attention, because we were not awake, because we were lazy. Well, you got a choice. You can fish or cut bait now.
All right. Well, I certainly agree with you. I think that we're going to have to take it back, certainly one block at a time, one precinct at a time, one city at a time, one county at a time, one state at a time. But we have to educate the American people to understand why America is different and what the Constitution really means. There's nobody, not one of our presidential nominees in either party other than Ron Paul will even talk about the Constitution, because they don't believe in the Constitution that they're going to one day have to swear to uphold. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Don Goldwater, and he's simply talking about a hit plan that he has to get through initiatives in the state of Arizona to try to be able, to enforce these ideas that employers cannot hire illegal immigrants, and if they do, and they knowingly do, and it can be proved that they knowingly do, they're going to lose a license to do business in Arizona, and they'll be out of business indefinitely. And it's a pretty stiff thing, but we have to begin enforcing the laws at the state level, since the federal government, because they have a different agenda and a different worldview, that the federal government refuses to enforce our immigration laws. So pick the story up, Don.
Well, first off, let me give you a website, if I could, for our initiatives. It's azgrassroots.com.
Now, one more time.
AZ, like Arizona, azgrassroots.com. And that'll give you the gist of a lot of the things. It'll give you the initiative. It'll let you know how you can help people who do not live in Arizona. You know what? We need funds. We need to raise some money to get these initiatives on the ballots, because along with the volunteers, we need to pay people to get out there and collect signatures.
All right, fine. How many signatures do you have to get?
200,000 per initiative.
All right, fine. Of course, can you get them both at the same time?
Yes. Yes, we are.
All right, fine. Well, that has certain advantages when you're running two of them and you get people to sign both initiatives. And certainly, your ideas should be welcomed in Arizona, because you know, the people overwhelmingly voted for recent legislation, make it extremely difficult for illegal immigrants. In fact, we've heard that a lot of the illegal immigrants have left Arizona. Of course, they're coming to California. I don't know whether we should thank you or yell at you, because they're leaving your state and coming to ours.
Well, tongue in cheek, if you don't mind, that's payback for stopping the border fence down there on the border of California and Arizona. All they did when they stopped that fence is they just gave the illegals another route. They quit coming through your area and started going around the fence through Arizona. We've been beaten up over here.
Okay, touche. Well, certainly, what about the labor market there in Arizona? Are there plenty of jobs, or certainly is there somewhat of a shortage of jobs because of the illegal immigrants? And then how is the economy overall influencing what's going on in Arizona?
Well, you know, the national economy is influencing a lot of stuff, regardless if you have this fight about illegal immigration. Interesting, if you look at the history of illegal immigration, when the United States economy goes down, people leave.
Right, and of course that may be a very, very good thing, of course. But the one thing is, you've got to cut off their welfare benefits. You've
yep.
got to cut off their subsidized mm-hmm. education, you know, where they can actually get cheaper college tuition than illegal American citizens from another state.
Well, we had a situation here that we stopped with one of our propositions. I believe it's Proposition 300, and basically what it was the state universities were saying, if you are coming in to Arizona from New Mexico, you have to pay out-of-state tuition. If you are illegally coming into Arizona through Mexico, illegally, we'll give it to you for free.
I mean, you wonder, you know, if this is organized insanity or not. Why would you want to subsidize people who are coming into your state illegally? And are these state universities? And I would, the best way to get that situation straightened out would be to start cutting the money that the state gives to those state universities.
Well, the state university, this is the funny part. This shows the mentality of the state university. The state university was saying, well, we're paying for these tuitions through private funds. But they were taking those private funds and they were putting them into the university's general funds. And if anybody knows anything about government, once you put money into a general fund, I don't care where that money came from, by law, it becomes public dollars. It becomes the same thing as your and my tax dollars. And so they were using our tax dollars to subsidize criminal intent.
Well, I wonder if anybody was really donating money in large sums of money to subsidize illegal immigrants going to college. Well, that's a question that maybe we'll have to ask down the line. Under any circumstances, certainly this is something that can be done. It can be accomplished, and we've got to deal with the illegal immigrant issue. Certainly the politicians are not going to. In fact, it was so interesting back in 2006, just before the congressional elections. Why, of course, they were going to get through, give everybody amnesty. That's what President Bush wanted. Well, he said, I don't want amnesty. I just want people to stay here and be able to become citizens. That's all. And, of course, but there was such an outcry from the American people. I mean, they jammed the switchboards in Washington, D.C., the emails, the faxes. And, of course, the congressmen, of course, are going to be standing for re-election. And they all ran for cover, and they weren't able to get that legislation through. Certainly, heaven only knows what's going to happen this next time. But remember, George Bush wanted this illegal immigrants. He wanted to let them come in and reward them for being here illegally. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Don Goldwater. You have a fair number of organizations that are working with you and helping you?
Oh, yes, we do. We've got, like I said before, national organizations that have been quite helpful, if not for just showing us how to get things done, to doing a little bit of work on their mail lists and stuff like that, to helping us gather signatures. We talked about grassfire.org. We talked about ALIPAC. We've talked about Numbers USA. And we've talked about, the Minutemen Civil Defense Corps. And God bless these people. And just the average person off the street who is so sick and tired of just being run over. You know, the cost of immigration, what it's costing us in the state of Arizona right now, it is costing us $3 billion annually to educate, medicate, and incarcerate illegal aliens. That works out to over $2,000 per legal household of our taxes going to take care of this problem. Now, we've got the economy that's falling short and coming through hard. Our state is probably going to run a $1 billion budget deficit this year. Wouldn't it be great if we could just take care of this problem, and then we would have money to take care of the budget shortfall, and we would also have money to give back to the people of Arizona?
Well, I know here in California, it's probably, I think it's been estimated about $10 billion it costs us for the illegal immigrants, and certainly for the health care for them, for the medical care for them, for the education for them. And here, of course, we're very nice. We give them food stamps and even subsidized housing lots of times. I mean, what insanity is this?
It doesn't make any sense. I mean, if you go back the history of immigration, originally immigration was designed so that the people that came into the United States would prove beneficial to the United States. And when I talk to people, I talk about the Stairs of Tears on Ellis Island. And if you can imagine a set of concrete stairs, probably about, 20 feet wide, and running down the stairs are three metal pipes that divide the stairs into three separate stairs. You can see across, it's very, very easy. And this was called the Stairs of Tears. And when you came into Ellis Island, you would pay your fee to get into the United States, and you would show them what your qualifications were to come in, and they would check you out physically to make sure that you weren't carrying some kind of a disease. And then they'd send you through these set of doors that connected to the Stairs of Tears. Now, if they sent you through the right door, which took you down the right side of the set of Stairs of Tears, that meant that you were cleared into the United States to go anywhere you wanted to go. If you went down the middle aisle...
Hold that thought for just a moment, Don. We've got to bring our stations on. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Don was just telling us the story of this. The Stairs of Tears at Ellis Island, where the immigrants were coming in years past. And, of course, there were three paths that they could take, either on the right side, in the middle side, and on the left side. They were separated by bars, and of course, if they went on the right side, they could come into America and go anywhere they wanted to. A dream, coming to this country where men could be free and certainly accomplish what they would, depending upon how hard they were willing to work. Go ahead, pick up the story there, Don.
Yeah, well, if they were directed down the middle stairs, that meant that they could come into New York and they could stay there locally, but they could not go into the body of the United States. If you were directed to the stairs on the left side, to the left door, that meant you're getting right back on the boat and leaving. And the reason they called it the Stairs of Tears is because sometimes families were divided up. Some people had to go back to England or Poland or wherever they were coming from. Some people only could stay in New York. And some people had the ability to go into the interior of the United States. The purpose behind, the point I'm trying to get at, is we knew who was coming into the United States. Today with illegal immigration, not only do we not know who's coming into the United States, but we don't know what kind of diseases these people are carrying with us. We have a reoccurrence of leprosy, we have new strains of tuberculosis, hepatitis that's coming in, and the majority of which is being transmitted through the grade schools where these kids are coming in and attending our schools.
Not only that, but of course they're bringing in violent gangs, and some of these from El Salvador, some of the most vicious gangs in the world, are coming in illegally into this country and operating openly to the point where even the police are fear for their lives.
I was at a national convention with the police association about a year and a half ago, and the then chief of police of Los Angeles gave the opening speech. And he walked in and he said, you know, I remember the good old days when it was just the Crips and the Bloods. Now we have MS-13. We've lost L.A. and Phoenix is next.
And you have to understand, this is being actively encouraged by people in government who on one hand are horrified at what's happening, on the other hand are refusing to enforce our laws. A lot of people come in here legally. They come in, of course, on a flight into the country. Now, the Congress has insisted that the Immigration Department track the people who come into this country, and if they don't leave when their visas expire, that they go after them. And you know, the government refuses to enforce those laws as well.
Well,
absolutely,
that's right.
Refuses to do what Congress has instructed them to. So you elect your representatives, they go to Washington, D.C., they vote the right way, but it doesn't make any difference. There is an elite who has a different agenda because they march to a different drumbeat. Because they dream a different dream. Go right ahead.
Well, the other thing is, too, is if you look at a congressional race or a senatorial race, track where the money is. Track where they raise the dollars to fund their campaign. I think John McCain, who was campaigning in Florida, for example, did a quick trip to New York because that's where the money was. Now, the money is not coming from you and me. It's not coming from people who are suffering because of the illegal immigration. Where is it coming from? It's coming from business who is benefiting or believe they're benefiting by the cheap labor of the illegal immigration source. And so when you hire a congressman or you elect a congressman, he gets back to D.C., he's trying to come back into his district to raise funds and stuff like that. People don't have the money, or they don't want to get the money, or they don't want to get involved in his campaign. In order for him to keep his job, instead of worrying about what he's voting or she is voting, they're more worried about, well, I've got to raise in congressional races, in the case of some of them, up to $2 or $3 million. Just to get reelected. So they go to the businesses, and the businesses say, you know, John, I'd really like to have you out there, and I think it's great. You're real strong on the Iraq war and stuff like that, but dang, you know, a lot of my companies use those illegal immigrations, and I got to have those employers and employees. And if I don't have those employees, I'm seriously going to suffer. And, you know, what do you think about the immigration issue, John? How do you feel about that? What do you think he's going to answer?
Well, I'm afraid he's going to, of course, follow the money, as it were, man. He's going to compromise his principles. And that's why I always like to say we have the finest congressmen and the finest senators that money could buy. And unfortunately, many of these people may very well want illegal immigration because, of course, they want to hire the people cheap. But there are others, of course, who really are globalists and have a different outlook on the world. And this is, of course, how they're actually undermining the fabric of our society. I mean, recently there was a vote in the Senate on making English the official language of the United States. And 33 or 34 United States senators, including, of course, both Obama and Hillary Clinton, voted against having English is the official language. Why? Because they want a multilingual society. They want a multicultural society. They want to be able to play one group against the other. And they eventually, of course, want to do away with our national sovereignty. And when you understand that, so much of this really does begin to make sense. Otherwise, you have to ask yourself, why would anybody be against having English as the official language of the United States?
You know, and I don't know if it's stupidity. I don't know if or what it is. But, you know, you can sit there and try and pit groups against groups using language. You can do it against diversity and stuff like that. But the fact of the nation is, if you look at the history of nations throughout the world, throughout time, nations with multicultures, nations with multi-languages do not survive.
Amen.
They are conquered, and they are conquered from within.
Right, and of course, there are some people who really don't have any loyalty to America. They have a loyalty to a different dream. And so when you understand that, some of this really makes sense. Well, you know, of course, we really need, of course, to have people involved in the electoral process. First of all, we need to make sure that our votes will count. If you have electronic voting machines, forget it. They can hack those. Certainly remember that one precinct in Ohio during the 2004 election with 800 registered people there and about 12 or 1300 votes for George Bush. How can you get that with only 800 people elected? Well, the explanation was the voting machine had a hiccup.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, just look at the electronic polling.
Right.
You know, I see, here locally where we'll have electronic polling and people will call up and say, hey, this poll is on the Arizona Republic. Get people to vote on this. And they may have had like 200 or 300 votes before we get the message out. And before the Republic will pull the poll because they don't like where it's going, you know, we've got 6,000 to 8,000 to 10,000 votes on there. Now, I can't guarantee, and I don't think anybody could guarantee, that that's 6,000 to 8,000 different voters, or if that's one person sitting at their computer going, vote, 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 vote.
Well, under any circumstances, we need to get a paper trail on the votes. We need to do away with the electronic voting machines. Oh, we should get back to a system where we know that at least we're going to have, it's going to be much harder to fix all the precincts. Certainly there are going to be people that are illegally stuffing ballot boxes, but at least if you have enough people there, well, you can report it. The way it is now, one person can hack into those voting machines and change the entire voting for a state. And, of course, then, of course, we do not have representative government. You know, and really there are people who don't believe in representative government. They believe that some men were born to rule and the rest of us were born to be ruled. And as long as you can convince the people that they're going to be able to throw the rascals out every 4 years, even if they can't, even if nothing's going to change, you got to give the perception that that they have the right to change it. And otherwise they'd be out in the streets demonstrating and maybe trying to overthrow the system. So we can't have that, and so that's why, we've got to have our elections every 4 years. Nothing changes. Nobody's talking about globalization. Nobody's talking about the immigration issue, at least not very, very seriously. Hillary Clinton says she's going to do something about it, but she never tells us what she's going to do. It's just that she's going to take care of it once we elect her as the next president of the United States. Well, anyway, of course, Don, certainly you've got, what, another 2 months or so before you have to have those signatures in?
We've got, we're going to go until May. We hope to have our signatures in by May.
Uh-huh.
The final drop-down deadline is July 7th. But we anticipate having our signatures in by May. And then, we've got to work against the employers here who have put up their own initiative, which is basically amnesty,
clear
amnesty. We're going to have to go against a lot of the big companies who are going to be putting in money into that initiative to go out and tell everybody how wonderful it is.
All right, fine. Well, let's get your website out one more time so people will know how to get in touch with you.
Yeah, it's azgrassroots.com.
AZ, of course, for Arizona.
And grassroots, all one word, azgrassroots.com.
All right, fine. Now, what about the Minutemen? Are they still being effective down there on the border?
Yes, we are. You know, being effective on the border, they're out here gathering petitions for not only our initiatives, but they're also gotten involved in the political process of attacking bills in the legislature that have to do with immigration. We've got about six bills in the legislature right now that's just total employer amnesty. And, you know, the sad part about this is that it's being run by Republicans. You would expect this to be run by Democrats, but we have Republicans out there in our state legislature that believe that no illegal aliens should be left behind.
Well, I think it's really tragic. You know, certainly I'm a lifelong Republican. I was until I finally realized they were as corrupt as the Democrats. So what we need, of course, is to get people who really believe in the principles of the Republican Party. And it can't be just, cutting taxes. It's got to be for responsible actions as far as social problems are concerned. And illegal immigration is a social problem. When you're bringing diseases into the country, when you're bringing crime into the country, when you created a situation, I don't know how many of our listeners have been to an emergency room at a hospital recently and tried to get seen, but I had my friend of mine actually go down there. And after waiting for 3 hours, the nurse came out and said, look, it's going to be another 9 hours before we can see you. We've got so many people here. Why don't you just take some aspirin and go home and try to get hold of your doctor in the morning? And unfortunately, the illegal immigrants are crowding into our emergency rooms all across this country, and, of course, specifically in Arizona and California. And of course, they don't pay. And then, of course, they have to take the whatever it costs, maybe they have to be admitted to the hospital, and then they have to take the cost of their hospitalization and tack it on to your hospital bill if you are unfortunate enough to have to go in there and you don't have insurance or insurance coverage. And so basically the hospital bills have nothing to do with cost. It has to do, of course, with paying for the illegal immigrants, which are actively being brought in by our government. And the federal government has mandated that the hospitals have to treat them, and they have to treat them without charge. What sort of madness is that?
I don't know. You're destroying the middle class of the United States. You've got a situation where the bills are going up, the taxes are going up. You know, people may be earning more, quote, per hour, but their take-home pay, their buying power, has diminished significantly over the years. And if we continue to do this, we are going to destroy what's left of the middle class of the United States. And guess what? Welcome to Mexico.
Right. As I always like to say, we'll raise the living status of the average American to that of the Mexican peasant, and then we'll all be happy. And people sort of look at you because they figure you're actually going to lower the standards, but they think, remember it a little bit more when you tell them we're going to raise the standards of the average middle-class American to that of the Mexican peasant. And this is really what's going to happen. And people can't believe that there's an organized effort to destroy the middle class, but we're well on the way to doing it as we destroy the value of the currency and the pension funds and the insurance policies and everything denominated in dollars. But that's another story altogether. Now, as far as the illegal immigration is concerned, certainly, are we seeing any less people coming across the border at this time, do you think?
It is slowing down a little bit coming across the border. I think that has a lot to do with the economy. It had also to do, at one point in time, we had a fictitious National Guard down on the border. And I say fictitious, not in regards to the National Guard, because, you know, God bless the National Guard and the Border Patrol and ICE. All these people are doing just a phenomenal job down on the border. But the fact of the matter is, our National Guard down on the border, their operating procedures were that they could have a rifle, they could have a bullet inside that rifle, but they were not allowed to chamber around, and if they were encroached on, anybody coming across the border, they were told to retreat to a safe position. We had two incursions about a year ago by the Mexican military on the Tennessee National Guard, which was stationed down in southern Arizona. The National Guard had to pull up and move. They had to get out of there because they did not have the authority to protect themselves. The Minutemen Civil Defense Corps went down and put a station down there, and we sat guard between the border and the National Guard. And it was more to protect the guard than anything else.
Well, you know, of course, this was all, of course, window dressing. The president promised he was going to do something. He was going to put the National Guard down there, but they weren't allowed to try to stop the people from coming in illegally. So why bother to put them down there? Well, it was just to placate the American people, to give the illusion that we're doing something, You know, like the old doctor when he was going to deliver a baby at home and he'd have everybody go out and boil water. You got to have them doing something. And that's exactly what the National Guard was. And are they still there or they pulled them off?
The Tennessee National Guard has been pulled off. Matter of fact, some have been sent to Afghanistan. Some have been sent to Kosovo. A couple friends of mine who are in there over in Kosovo removing mines now. So the National Guard is being pulled off the border at this point in time.
And of course, these people joined the National Guard to defend our nation, not to be sent overseas for these international wars that the president wants to fight. That has no justification at all. I mean, why are our troops over in Kosovo backing the Islamic terrorists, of course, who are the group that we backed over in Kosovo, just as we backed the Islamic terrorist organization, Al-Qaeda representatives, who were fighting in Bosnia? Why would we be doing something like that? Just doesn't make sense. So there's a lot of things that don't make sense, but nobody ever tells them. And then, of course, sending them over to Afghanistan, where nobody really knows why we're fighting there, because we went in to get Osama bin Laden and we went in to get the Al-Qaeda, and most of them have left and gone into Pakistan, which we're financing. So why don't we attack Pakistan instead of fighting in Afghanistan? And of course, we can't do that, my goodness, because they're our ally. We can't fight Pakistan where the Al-Qaeda and Al-Qaeda and the Taliban are. In fact, we're funding Pakistan, that's funding their intelligence agencies, that's funding the Taliban, who are killing our boys in the poppy fields and the cities of Afghanistan, which really doesn't make sense. But then so much of what's going on, it doesn't make sense. Our guest today has been Don Goldwater, and once again, that website?
azgrassroots.com.
azgrassroots.com, and of course, Don does need help for his initiatives that he's trying to get through down there. And of course, sometimes you just have to pay people to go out and gather signatures. And
remember, we're on the front lines. What gets through us comes to you.
Amen to that. And of course, we've got a fence on our border, but they don't have a fence on theirs. We're going to be back here in just a moment to wrap up today's program right here at Radio Liberty. Well, Don, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program. What are the parting thoughts you'd like to leave with our listeners?
Well, the parting thoughts are this. You know, believe in ourselves. Believe in the fact that we can take control, we can take our government, we can take our country back. If we stay involved, if we believe that we can do this, then the best years of the United States are still ahead of us. If we are so downtrodden that we believe that all is lost, and we might as well pack up our bags and move to Bolivia, because nothing's going to change. It's just going to get worse. We do not have the ability anymore to look to Washington, D.C. We do not have the ability anymore to look to our elective representatives, because they need to look to us. We need to take the lead now. Lead, follow, or get the hell out of the way.
Amen to that. Well, I appreciate everything that you're doing down there and the other people in the Minutemen, and I know most of them are great guys that really are patriots, and of course they're doing what the federal government refuses to do, because the federal government refuses to try to stop the influx of illegal immigrants, and in fact they're doing everything they can to encourage it by requiring hospitals to take care of the illegal immigrants, by allowing the disposition of food stamps and welfare benefits and even housing benefits many times to illegal immigrants. And mainly by encouraging laws locally where the police, even if they know somebody's an illegal immigrant, cannot turn them over to the immigration authorities. And none of this makes any sense from a logical point of view. So if there's no logical explanation, then there's got to be another explanation. Well, Don, certainly, what would you like our listeners to do, other than perhaps to volunteer to help finance what you're doing? Do you need people down there on the border? How would they volunteer for that if they're interested in doing it?
Yeah, if they're interested in getting involved with the Minuteman Civil Defense Corps, you can go to MinutemanHQ.com and apply to get vetted. We need to do a background check. If you have a concealed carry permit, that's pretty much done. If you don't, then that's all right, too. We'd love to have you down on the border. We love to have people, and we do have people from all over the United States that come down to our borders. We have February musters and March musters for weekends. Twice a year, we have a full month muster. You don't have to be there for the full month, but, you know, we'd love people to come down, take a look at the beautiful desert down in southern Arizona, enjoy the hospitality of good people of Arizona, and help protect your country.
Amen to that. Well, thank you for everything you're doing. Thank you for being with us, Don. I do hope that maybe we could get you onto some of our other programs. As you know, we do 5 hours of talk radio a day, and we have 4 different audiences every week. So I think your message is important. God bless.
Thank you, and God bless.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I hope you enjoyed our interview with Don Goldwater, who is, of course, the nephew of Barry Goldwater. And then, of course, we want to point out we do have some excellent material. We have a DVD called The Conquest of Aztlan. I don't know whether that's DVD or video or both, but if you can call our number 1-800-544-8927. The DVD or video is put together by Glenn Spencer, and actually it gets into the fact that the Ford Foundation is funding so much of this. And if you want to know about the Ford Foundation, you need to get the book. It was written in 1958. But it's called Foundations, Their Power and Influence. It goes into the background of how the Ford Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation, the Carnegie Foundation were doing everything they could to destroy our country at that time and destroy the love which every American should have for this nation, and funding the radicals and the socialists and the communists. But the average American has never heard that. But you need to understand who the enemy are. And part of them, of course, are the globalists at the Council on Foreign Relations, and part of them are great tax-exempt foundations. But they all interlock. And when I was back at the Council on Foreign Relations headquarters in New York, of course, and working in the library, there were the people from the great tax-exempt foundations, Rockefeller, Carnegie, and Ford, all globalists, all intent upon the destruction of the sovereignty of our nation. Well, of course, we have a 4-tape set on immigration. We have a 4-tape set on the called The Impending Police State. And then if you want to get a 4-tape set, and I'm not sure what we call it, but you could order it. It's on the North American Union, my interviews with Dr. Corsi, Jerome Corsi. And understand that there is an agenda to destroy the sovereignty of our nation, and we'll join together Mexico and Canada and the United States and raise our living standards of that of the Mexican peasant. And then once, of course, our people are impoverished, then, of course, they will be quite willing to give up their sovereignty and join the world government. I fear that there probably will be a major war before this is accomplished, but then there's so much that's going on today. As the United States is the largest marketer of weapons anywhere in the world. We're giving Saudi Arabia all sorts of F-16 jets and large numbers of jets. We're selling them, of course, to Pakistan, the most modern jets with the most modern equipment and guided bombs. And why are we doing things like that? How are we preparing? Why does Saudi Arabia need F-16s, squadron after squadron of these fighter planes? Why, we're planning on a war. We're arming the enemy in preparation for the war, just like we did with Adolf Hitler when American corporations provided the weapons for Adolf Hitler so we can have a great war. And just exactly as during the Vietnam War, we were financing the Soviet Union, who was financing North Vietnamese, who was financing the Viet Cong, who were killing our troops, and as today we're financing Pakistan, that's financing the ISI intelligence unit, that's funding the Taliban, that's killing our troops in the poppy fields and villages of Afghanistan. It's like deja vu all over again. You need to get our material, and to understand it, you really need, of course, to get my talk on the Forbidden Secret, because behind all of this are powerful spiritual forces. That's the Forbidden Secret, my talk on the Brotherhood of Darkness, our 4-tape set on the secret behind the secret, and then, of course, the videos. They sold their souls for rock and roll, the 3-hour, 4-hour, or 10-hour version. They sold their souls for rock and roll. And, of course, it's the story of the music industry today. But, of course, the same thing is going on in politics. It's going on, certainly, in government agencies and the great tax-exempt foundations. And in every aspect of our society where we have people who've sold their souls for advantage and money and prosperity and notoriety. But, of course, you have to understand we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. And many of these people, of course, have sold their souls to Lucifer. There are Luciferian organizations. If you read my publications, we will tell you how to reach them on the Internet. They're there. And, of course, they're taking a lot of their things down that we've quoted. You know, of course, the last thing they want is the American people to know that they really are there. As somebody once said, the two devils were talking. One of them said, you know, we'll know we've won when we can convince them we don't exist. And that's exactly what they've done. The average individual doesn't understand the supernatural. They do not understand that Satan is alive and well and working in America today.
You're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5 KU band, frequency 11836, symbol rate 20770. Thank you for listening.
News on the Information Radio Network. I'm Greg Moore. President Bush is huddling with congressional leaders today, hoping for a quick turnaround on a stimulus package. Correspondent Mark Smith.
It's the president's first chance to meet with top lawmakers since they got back from their holiday break, and there's a real sense of urgency. Aides say Bush wants a stimulus plan passed within weeks so Americans can quickly see tax rebate checks. But he's said to be open-minded on the specifics. Democrats also want the package to help the working poor with added jobless and food stamp benefits. And then there's the size. Bush has suggested a $150 billion price tag, but Press Secretary Dana Perino says he's not closing the door to something even bigger.
Convicted terrorism conspirator Jose Padilla has been sentenced to 17 years and 4 months in prison. Padilla was once accused of plotting with Al-Qaeda to blow up a radioactive dirty bomb in a major city. This is IRN.
How's your money?
What's it do you?
Is it safe?
Who wants to know?
Can you even keep what you've got?
You're the pretty nosy smart piece, ain't you?
Have you got enough money?
Yeah, right.
Thought-provoking questions, aren't they? But we need the answers, and we need them fast. You can find those answers by reading The New Economic Disorder by economist Larry Bates. Dr. Bates explains in no uncertain terms how government and financial insiders are controlling your money, working to make all of us equal, equally poor. The New Economic Disorder is a startling expose of the coming financial wipeout. Its frank everyday language is easy to understand and will change the way you look at investments, even the way you look at money. This bestseller explains how to be on the receiving end of the upcoming inevitable transfer of wealth. Your copy of The New Economic Disorder is waiting for you now for only $9.95 by calling 1-800-336-7000. That's 1-800-336-7000. Better hurry, though. The midnight hour is fast approaching.
He ain't kidding.
Israel is easing its blockade on Gaza. We have more from correspondent Mark Levie.
International pressure on Israel, especially from Egypt, did the job. Israel is partially lifting its blockade on the Gaza Strip, allowing a week's worth of fuel in. Israel slammed the borders shut last week after a spike in daily rocket attacks from Gaza. Human rights groups predicted a quick humanitarian crisis. Then Gaza's Islamic Hamas leaders shut down the only electric power plant. Israel said it's all for show. There's no crisis. But as of this morning, fuel, food, and medicine are getting back into Gaza. Mark Levie, Tel Aviv.
The State Department's counterterrorism chief says the U.S. isn't satisfied with the intelligence it's getting about extremist groups in Pakistan. Still, Dale Daly says the U.S. won't conduct military strikes inside Pakistan without President Pervez Musharraf's okay. For the latest news and analysis, log on to IRNnews.com.
Is life moving too fast? If you're self-employed or a small business owner, you have no choice but to move as fast as you can. Sometimes you move so fast you don't take a close look at life's details. When was the last time you looked at your health insurance? If you don't have health insurance or if you have the wrong coverage, serious medical bills could mount up. That's where the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company comes in.
Call 877-735-6968. That's 877-735-6968.
It's a dirty little secret of food poisoning, E. coli, and certain other foodborne illnesses can sometimes trigger serious health problems months or years after patients survive the initial bout. Scientists have described high blood pressure, kidney damage, even full kidney failure striking 10 to 20 years later in people who survived severe E. coli infection as children. They've also found a mysterious paralysis that can attack people who just had mild symptoms. While these conditions strike a small fraction of the millions of people who get food poisoning each year, experts say no one knows just how many people are at risk. A consumer group called STOP, which stands for Safe Tables, Our Priority, is beginning the first national registry of food poisoning survivors with long-term health problems. It's seeking people willing to share their medical histories with scientists in hopes of boosting research. For one Canadian paramedic, survival mode entails eating dirt, warming himself with dead beavers, and fending off coyotes with a whistle. All this while pinned under an ATV for 4 days and three nights in frigid temperatures. Ken Hildebrand was riding in Alberta bush country collecting animal traps when his ATV hit a rock and rolled on his leg. A hiker and his dog found Hildebrand in his fourth day. He was taken to a hospital. One hospital official says the only thing on Hildebrand's mind after the ordeal was that he'd miss his next paramedic shift. I'm Greg Moore, and that's news from the Information Radio Network.
This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour open-line talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. To express your viewpoint, please call 804-754-1988. That's 804-754-1988. And now, with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
It's America's spiritual health chart. 86% of us believe in God, but 91% of us lie regularly. Only 28% believe the Bible should be taken literally. As far as our morality goes, 78% believe we have severe moral decline, yet 96% of Americans believe they're doing a good job in teaching children moral values, and only 11% believe their life or ways have anything to do with America's moral decline. As far as our families go, we have the highest divorce rate in the world, 48 million children murdered by abortion since 1973. 37% of all our kids are born illegitimate, and cohabitation has increased well over 1,000% since 1960 and 72% since 1990. Do we have peace in our country? Well, some say we're the most violent of all industrialized nations. Rage is all the rage. Road rage, air rage, outrage, school rage, and then religion. Most religious of all the industrialized nations, George Gallup declared America a nation of biblical illiterates. He said we've become a polytheistic nation with a new multi-faith religion, and Time magazine confirmed in so many gods we trust. Welcome to Viewpoint. I'm Chuck Crismeyer. It's conversation with ever-increasing conviction, talk that transforms, and anchor your seatbelt. Today, my friend, we're going to go on a winding and twisting road through the countryside of evangelicalism. We have a special guest that will be joining us on our bumpy ride here today. His name is Jeff Scheller. He is the author of a new book called Believers. He is an award-winning journalist who reported for U.S. News and World Report, one of the three top business magazines in America, news magazines rather, in America for 24 years, 15 as the religion editor. He's authored 35 cover stories and now is the contributing editor for U.S. News and World Report. He's joining us live today to talk about a journey into evangelical America. Jeff, it's so good to have you on board.
Chuck, it's great to be with you.
Jeff, the moment I got a hold of your book, I got to tell you, I was really curious as to where you were going to be coming from, what this was all going to be about, because, quite frankly, having grown up in the broader reaches of evangelicalism and now being 62 years of age, I have seen the whole concept of evangelicalism morph almost worse than the evolutionists would talk about. And it's almost unrecognizable these days. We have so many different permutations and combinations of evangelicals, and yet we hear the news media refer generally to evangelicals as if somehow this has a Webster's Dictionary meaning. It's all very confusing, isn't it?
Well, it is, and that's exactly why I undertook this project about 3 years ago. You know, it seems like in the last two or three decades, evangelicals have become highly visible and certainly an increasingly influential part of American society. And consequently, they've gotten a lot of attention by the nation's media, media who, you know, 30 or 40 years ago largely ignored them or were unaware of their existence. But unfortunately, the image that has come through so much of that media coverage is a very flawed one. It's filled with stereotypes and caricatures, and that didn't square with what I thought I knew about evangelicals, both from my professional experience as a journalist covering religion and as a former evangelical myself.
And yet you were challenged because here you are, a professional journalist, and the folks there at U.S. News and World Report, not sharing any of that kind of understanding and conviction, thought the whole concept of evangelicalism was just an absurdity and worthy of nothing short of mocking behind closed doors.
Well, yeah, and that was that part of the book that you're referring to was an anecdote coming from the mid-80s, back during the time, or late 80s, when the PTL scandal and
Jimmy Swaggart
and all of that was going on. And that, you know, that put evangelicals on the radar screen for the first time.
Well, now they're on the radar screen again with Chuck Grassley, the U.S. Senator, sending out letters to six of the most prominent broadcasters in the country saying, ante up with some information concerning your financial dealings.
That's right. That's right. Well, you know, when you're dealing with a subculture, or maybe that's not even an appropriate word anymore to, in reference to evangelicals, when you're dealing with a contingent of 60 million people, you know, that 60 million people, they don't all think and act and vote alike. And when you're, you know, some of those 60 million people, you're certainly going to find some who are unseemly, who do some things that most of the rest of us would wish they didn't. But, you know, to point your finger at any one segment like that and say, this is who evangelicals are, obviously that's not correct.
Well, you know, even in the number that you just quoted, I would have to even take umbrance with that, because that presumes a definition of evangelical that the media have spawned, i.e., generally speaking, anyone who claims to believe the Bible and thinks they should tell somebody else about their faith. But generally speaking, an evangelical historically would not come under that description. In fact, George Barna, pollster of the church, says the percentage of evangelicals in the country is somewhere between 7 and 8%, not 25%.
Yeah. Well, that's, I mean, you put your finger on a problem, and that is not only can you define evangelicals, obviously attempts are made, but who gets to define them?
I think what's happened, Jeff, is that the media, there's an ever-growing animus toward Christianity, period, in our country, as we see, having been spawned in the last couple of presidential elections, and now even in this one coming up. And because of that, the media now basically has blanket coverage all Christians, unless they're hyper-liberal, as evangelicals. And therein lies much of our conversational problem.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure I would agree with that analysis. I certainly think there are examples of that, but I think I would avoid making a broad sweep and say that the media does exactly that. you're making valid points. But keep in mind, it's not just the media. You know, Barna is a pollster.
Yes.
He's a Christian, but he's a pollster.
And he has an angle.
Well, whatever. Don't we all, I suppose?
Yes. Uh-huh.
But there are other pollsters. Many of them are highly regarded, highly qualified. I'm thinking of John Green, who now works at the Pew Center for Religion and Public Life.
Mm-hmm.
There are people out there who do a good job of polling, and part of polling involves who defining, you know, contingents or cohorts of people.
Well, it sure does, and you've done a wonderful job. I love the way you've handled your book. I think you've done a masterful job at it. I want to make it available to our listeners, Jeff. Your gift of $15 or more to Save America Ministries will put Believers, A Journey into Evangelical America, into your hands. Friends, it's going to be a fascinating insight, a journey that you need to take. Give us a call, 1-800-SAVE-USA. Write to us at Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. Writing a check, add $4 for postage and handling. Get it on our website, saveus.org, and we'll be right back to move forward on this journey into evangelicalism.
Did you hear about the latest study from a Duke University sociologist? It's called Social Isolation in America, and it's been the talk of columnists and news articles everywhere. As one columnist wrote, the story could just as well have been called Friendless in America. One-fourth of all Americans admit they have no one to talk with about important matters. Another quarter say they have only one friend. What's missing? What's missing is good old-fashioned hospitality. Our hyper-individualism is actually killing us. That's why Chuck and Kathy Grismire's recent book, The Power of Hospitality, is so important for you and all of us, even our churches. When 70% of pastors admit they have no friends, we're in trouble. So get your copy of The Power of Hospitality today for your gift of $16 to Save America Ministries. Call 1-800-SAVE-USA. The Power of Hospitality will change your life. Call 1-800-SAVE-USA. That's 1-800-SAVE-USA.
Is the IRS ruining your life? Are you afraid of losing everything? You can end the despair you feel right now. Get ready to write down an important phone number you're going to need to help solve your IRS nightmare. The number is 800-584-1095.
Hello, I'm John Harris, president of J.K. Harris & Company, the nation's largest tax representation firm. IRS problems have a way of ruining every aspect of your life if you let them. They don't go away on their own. The IRS can attach your wages, your pension, your savings, even your Social Security check. Over the past decade, the tax team at J.K. Harris has successfully negotiated settlements for our clients, saving them millions of dollars.
If you owe the IRS back taxes, call J.K. Harris at 800-584-1095. You may qualify to dramatically reduce your tax debt. Call 800-584-1095. That's 800-584-1095.
We're confronting the issues of America's heart and home right here on Viewpoint today. Our viewpoint does determine destiny. Our viewpoint concerning the Christian faith, what it means to follow Christ, what it means to be a Christian, a disciple of Jesus Christ, determines destiny. There are no neutral viewpoints. Every one of our viewpoints has a destiny. And so we want to make sure that that destiny is straight on from God's viewpoint, which is the only one that really ultimately matters. And yet today, we are breaking down in our discussion an element of the broader Christian community and within the broader religious community in America known generally as evangelicalism. Comes from a word, evangelical, which comes from yet another root word, evangel, which basically means the good news to go out and tell others about. And our special guest today, Jeff Scheller, has found it fascinating as a veteran journalist to explore that realm of society called the evangel, those that are carrying out the evangel known as evangelicals. Jeff, you've been in this for how long now?
In covering religion?
Yes.
Since about 1990.
Mm-hmm.
So, let's see.
Well, that's a good 17 years.
Yeah, that's right. And, of course, you know, that's on a professional level as a journalist covering the field. But, you know, growing up in America and coming from the Midwest, obviously I've religion has been a part of my life as well. So, so you might say, really, this is something that I've been involved with all my life.
I will, just to establish a certain element of credibility as an expert witness here, you know, as a trial attorney, if you've got somebody coming on to testify and they're going to be an expert witness, you have to qualify them as an expert witness. So let me qualify you for just a moment here.
All right.
Talking about your background, not only are you a veteran journalist, but tell us about your early experience. You claim to be a follower of Christ, but early on, you came in, through a Baptist church? Tell us a little bit about your experience.
Right. Midwest... Basically, befriended some kids. The kid who turned out to be my best friend in junior high was Baptist. I'd say a fundamentalist Baptist, and he invited me to Youth for Christ and eventually to his church and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And through that, I accepted Christ. And having come from a home that was not particularly religious, wasn't hostile to religion, but wasn't particularly religious. And I really threw myself into it for the next several years,
mm-hmm.
at church day and night, whenever the doors were unlocked. Learned a real sort of hard-edge version of Christianity.
What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, there were a lot of do's and don'ts,
mm-hmm.
And a lot of emphasis on those.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of sort of pressure, certainly, to go out and set aside any fear that you might have or any concern about how you're going to be regarded by your friends at school or in your whatever. And as a teenager, a young teenager, you know, you're really susceptible to peers and you're concerned about how people think of you. And, you know, I was being taught, cast that aside, go out there and preach the gospel, try to win your friends to Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Don't worry if they laugh at you. It's your duty. You got to get out there. You know, if someday all these people are going to go to hell and you're going to be held responsible for it if you didn't do it.
And that's what we commonly call evangelism, which is spreading the evangel or the good news of Jesus.
Right, and there are good ways and effective ways to do it, and there are other ways that
are
pretty heavy-handed, and I would classify my experiences in the latter category.
All right.
So that soured me on things for a while, and I kind of stepped away from things, but... not for long. Found myself in a more moderate, I would describe, more moderate evangelical situation for my young adult years. Married a evangelical young lady who's now still my wife.
Good.
But you know, we took a little bit different journey. We found ourselves moving in a little bit different direction, out of sort of the traditional evangelicalism, into a more historical, what I consider to be historical branch of a type of Christianity, retaining our basic beliefs, retaining our high view of Scripture, retaining our belief in Jesus as the only way of salvation, but
mm-hmm.
just without a lot of the other trappings that I came to associate with traditional evangelicalism.
Well, there was a cover story not too long ago, I believe it was U.S. News and World Report, or Newsweek, talking about rituals being restored and re-embraced by evangelicals and others within the broader Christian community as a new trend.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know if you're remembering a story that I wrote. Do you say if it was a cover story, it wasn't mine, but that was one of the first stories I wrote when I started covering religion back in the early 90s,
yeah.
Taking note of that very trend.
Now, this is just in the last year or so.
Yeah, well, then mm-hmm. someone has discovered it again.
Yeah, cover story, big emphasis.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of merging, it seems, of a whole lot of different threads, ribbons, rivulets, tributaries within the broader Christian community. And in many respects, all of them are being... except for the very liberal ones, are being labeled as evangelical.
Yeah, and that's well in some quarters. I don't know that, you know, even within evangelicalism, I was at a meeting, was invited to come and speak to the National Association of Evangelical Board
mm-hmm.
A couple of years ago. This was just before, Ted Haggard was still president of that organization at the time.
Right.
In fact, he invited me. was about a month later that he had his fall.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember at that meeting, the one subject that came up was, has the time come for us to come up with a different name? You know, that the word evangelical had seemed to lose its meaning in the minds of a lot of these people.
Yeah.
And they were seriously considering whether they should begin to look for another term.
Well, and you used the word fundamentalist a few moments ago, and that itself has lost its meaning. It's almost as if these words that were used originally to describe real things now are being used as labels to libel people to try to either cast a maligning light, usually a maligning light, on a particular group of people.
Yeah, well, I think in regards to how the term fundamentalist got that way, you're exactly right. You know, at the beginning of the 20th century, there was a very specific meaning of that term.
Sure.
And it retained that meaning throughout at least the first half of the 20th century.
It just meant to restore the fundamentals of the faith that we were drifting far away from.
Right, right. And then with the rise of Billy Graham and the sort of the parachurch movement, there was a different ethos that began to arise that was much more welcoming, much more hospitable to people who in other denominations,
mm-hmm.
and the some of the fundamentalists self-described didn't like that development,
and so then we
saw the neo-evangelicals moving out and away from the fundamentalists.
All right, let's talk a little bit more about that, because it might be a little confusing for some folk who would see Billy Graham as the all-encompassing identity figure for everyone, and the reality is that that was not true. In fact, Billy Graham and Carl F. H. Henry, there's another pastor, actually came together to start a magazine called Christianity Today, which really was the flagship of the whole new so-called evangelical movement that was being carved away, a whole new identity created away from the fundamentals.
Right, right. Well, from the fundamentalism.
Fundamentalism, yes.
Right, right. I think that they retained it. I don't think their theology changed at all. I think that they could still, mark a checkbox next to the pamphlets that came out in the early 20th century called the Fundamentals,
mm-hmm.
which gave the movement its name. But it was more, their concern was how Christians, how evangelical or fundamentalist Christians were engaging, or how they should engage the culture, whether they should engage the culture at all.
Well, and now, here we are, some 60 years after all that began in the 50s, 60 years now, and we're still saying we have a whole new movement going on called the Emerging Church Movement that says, you guys, whether you're fundamentalists, whether you're evangelicals of that variety that we're just talking about, you're all irrelevant. So I have in front of me now Relevant Magazine, published supposedly by evangelicals who are trying to merge with liberal movements, all kinds of things, tributaries being brought together, still claiming the broad label of evangelical.
Yeah. Well,
what do you make of it?
Well, I think that it's like nothing new under the sun. Basically, I mean, this has always been sort of a hallmark of whatever this group of people who we're struggling to come up with a name here. I mean, you don't think that the name evangelical is being properly applied, or it's being applied perhaps by people who shouldn't be applying it. And yet people within the movement apply it to themselves. So there's clearly here, there is an identity that many people claim it for themselves. It's a self-identity.
Mm-hmm.
There is an identity that is accepted and perpetuated by people outside of the movement, including some people in the media. And some of them are doing it probably for the motives that you described earlier, as a way of sort of labeling them and then dismissing them, but the term has some term has to be applied because you know, even the term Christian is, you know, you can say that that is a term that has lost its meaning.
Well, I agree, and I was going to bring that up, and it's almost as if in some respects we're replacing the term Christian with the word evangelical, broadly speaking, particularly within the conversation of media, at least at election time. So there's so much more that we want to talk about. We've laid out the chaos and confusion of understanding here in the first half of the program. We'll go into some more details, going back into some of the history and some of the threads that are woven through the concept of evangelicalism after this break. Friends, I want to urge you to get a copy of Jeff's book, Believers, A Journey into Evangelical America. Here's a guy who's been around. He's seen it. He's experienced it, not only from within the camp, but from outside the camp as a journalist. He knows what people are thinking. He's heard what they've been saying for the last 20 years, and it's an important insight. I think you'd do well to get a copy of the book. Your gift of $15 or more to Save America Ministries will put it in your hands. Just call us, 1-800-SAVE-USA, or write to us at Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 7-0879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. Ready and check. Add $4 for postage and handling. Here's what we're going to do. For everyone who orders this book, we are going to provide our new, updated Spiritual State of the Union fact sheet. There's nothing like this, friends. Nothing like it in America. Diagnosis and Prescription, Connecting the Christian Disconnect. It presents the year 2008 edition, The Spiritual State of the Union. Now, it's on our website, saveus.org. That's www.saveus.org. You don't want to miss it, but we'll provide a hard copy to you for all of those who get a copy of the book, Believers. We'll be right back.
On the Information Radio Network, I'm Greg Moore. President Bush is huddling with congressional leaders today, hoping for a quick turnaround on a stimulus package. Correspondent Mark Smith.
It's the president's first chance to meet with top lawmakers since they got back from their holiday break, and there's a real sense of urgency. Aides say Bush wants a stimulus plan passed within weeks so Americans can quickly see tax rebate checks. But he's said to be open-minded on the specifics. Democrats also want the package to help the working poor with added jobless and food stamp benefits. And then there's the size. Bush has suggested a $150 billion price tag, but Press Secretary Dana Perino says he's not closing the door to something even bigger.
Convicted terrorism conspirator Jose Padilla has been sentenced to 17 years and 4 months in prison. Padilla was once accused of plotting with Al-Qaeda to blow up a radioactive dirty bomb in a major city. This is IRN.
Six. That's the number. 6 out of 10 Americans are now in debt. So if you're in trouble with debt, you're not alone. If your credit card bills are piling up, call Consolidated Credit now. The Freedom Quest program from Consolidated Credit can get the credit card companies to reduce or eliminate your interest. They'll consolidate your bills into one easy payment, and they'll cut your monthly payments by up to 50%. They're the experts, and that's why over 5 million people have called Consolidated Credit. 6 out of 10 people may be in debt, but one call to Consolidated Credit can get you out. They're the freedom people. Only Consolidated Credit has the Freedom Quest program. Call now. 1-800-897-8372. 1-800-897-8372. Consolidated Credit. When credit card debt is the problem, they're the solution.
5701 West Sunrise Boulevard, Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Licensed by New York State Banking Department. Licensed Debt Management Service Provider, Maryland 49.
With an IRN Business News Update, I'm Dick Shannon. Financial markets worldwide are being hammered by fears of a savage economic downturn, but the Federal Reserve appears to be all but alone in fighting it. For now, the Bank of Canada was the only other central bank. Quarter point reduction paled alongside the Fed's 3/4 point move. Notably idle, the European Central Bank, which has kept lending rates at 4% since mid-2007 and shows no sign of changing course despite mounting signs of weakness in the Eurozone economy. Of an estimated $1.2 trillion in collateral collateralized debt obligations U.S. financial institutions issued in recent years. Roughly $300 to $400 billion were sold to European banks. As banks are forced to recognize losses on some of those deals, a spreading credit crunch will likely pinch European businesses. Oil futures lowered, extending overnight declines. Many investors doubt the Fed's emergency move yesterday will stave off a serious slowdown that would dampen demand. With an IRN Business News Update, I'm Dick Shannon.
We're reporting the facts, restoring the faith here today on Viewpoint, Becoming Christians That Count for the Kingdom, as we look at the story of evangelicalism, or at least explore some of the tributaries and rivulets that have led to this brand name called evangelicalism that now, after 60 years, seems to be losing much of its significance and meaning. Today we're at least exploring some of that with a new guest, Jeff Scheller, with his book Believers, A Journey into Evangelical America. Here is a veteran journalist who, with U.S. News & World Report, was their religion editor for 15 years, and before that was serving also as a journalist with them, and so he's got a vast array of experience. But Jeff, here's the deal. You were giving us statistics. We have two sets of statistics. George Barna, pollster to the church, says that evangelicals constitute 7 to 8% of the American populace. You said somewhere around 25%, depending on how you define it.
Right.
But regardless, there is this perception, and of course the media drives this perception, but not only the media. Folks like Dr. James Dobson with Focus on the Family, Jerry Falwell, the whole culture war mentality has, for the last 30 years, increasingly driven this idea that evangelicals are of such monumental weight and importance and voice in the country that we can turn an election. And so people out there are scared to death, and they say, you know, we're turning this thing into nothing but a theocracy, that the whole nation's in danger of the invasion of the theocrats called evangelicals.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, the people who would, the people outside the movement who would try to create that scary portrait are helped in their task by, you know, words spoken in public and over the airwaves and in books by certain evangelical self-proclaimed spokesmen.
Such as?
And so, you know, but the problem is you for an outsider, a media person, to take those words and extrapolate them, you know, when Jim Dobson makes a statement, a sincere statement on an issue of public policy that he feels impacts upon the family, and he gets and he gets indignant about it and tells his listeners to, you know, to call your congressman and write letters. I mean, he is doing that, I'm sure, out of proper motivation.
Right.
But it is to his advantage and to his benefit, I'm not saying personal benefit, but certainly political advantage, for policymakers to think that he speaks for all evangelicals.
So when he threatens the Republican Party, saying, you either conform to our platform or we're pulling out.
Right.
That's what you're talking about.
Well, and he's done that a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, the point is, where is he going to go?
Yeah.
but you know, but it's, so it's not, you know, it's not completely, it's understandable to a great extent why people have that impression that of evangelicals as being a very politicized movement, but it is, you know, it's clearly not the case. I mean,
right.
60 million people, again, the number, it's not the number that I came up with, but I mean, evangelical scholars, historians, pollsters, I think it's a pretty good number, and we can talk about definitions more if you want, why I think that number is accurate. But the point is, a good chunk of American people are evangelicals, and they don't all act and think and vote alike.
All right, well, here's what really amazes me. I have in my hands a report that came from Jonathan Falwell, the son of the late Jerry Falwell, who was the founder of the Moral Majority. and at the very heart of the culture wars of the last 30 years. And Jonathan Falwell, here's the heading, Culture Turning from God. Now, how can the American culture be turning from God if evangelicals are so God-centered, God-obeying, theocratic, and have such sway in the country? What's going on?
Well, you know, they do have influence. They don't have absolute influence.
Or maybe we're not living up to what we say we believe.
Well, that could very well be part of it as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, look, evangelicals, I mean, it's not either or here. It's not either you become a completely political animal and put your entire focus as a movement in attempting to transform the culture through political means, which I think most evangelicals would say, no, that's not what we really want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Or you the opposite extreme, you just completely wash your hands of the political system and go back into fundamentalist isolationism and just basically, you know, live in your own subculture, mm-hmm. and that's the end of it. Those aren't the only two choices. And so I think, you know, you do find, and I found in my book, in the process of researching the book, I found that, on the one hand, evangelicals are not, as generally speaking, politicized, highly politicized, as some media accounts would make them out to be.
Mm-hmm.
But to my surprise, I also found them to be much less, I mean, I expected to find the opposite, frankly. I expected to find a relative handful of very activist, politically active people, basically the rabble-rousers, a
mm-hmm.
small cadre of people around them, everyone else just kind of, you know, more interested in what's going on at their churches, raising their families, living their lives, you know, going to work every day. And while certainly that does describe them, I found them to be much more tuned in, much more aware, much more concerned about events going on in their community, in the world, in
mm-hmm.
the nation, and informed, and wanting to participate, at least certainly on the level of voting, and perhaps even occasionally working for a candidate or whatever. But, you know, but not the overtly, you know, rabid, highly politicized, scary person that, you know, sometimes they're made out to be.
All right. Now, if you go back in American history, if the term evangelical had existed back before the Revolutionary War, it was evangelicals then who brought about the first great awakening that stirred the nation, that gave the moral and spiritual underpinnings for us to win that war.
I would say that's generally true.
And then after the Revolutionary War and the United States Constitution, there was a falling away in the country, a spiritual falling away. And then came a second great awakening in the around 1830 and following into 1850. And one would, I think, have to characterize that having been led by evangelicals, at least if there had been that term at that time.
Right. I think that's accurate. But keep in mind also that, in terms of a theological sort of description, I mean, if you come up with certain key characteristics that you could use to define evangelicals today or 200 years ago, what you would find is that the theologically conservative evangelical, what we would now call evangelicals, were the primary, they were the majority within the denominations. In other words,
mm-hmm.
what we think of today as the mainline denominations
mm-hmm.
were basically all controlled by, run by, and populated by a majority of evangelical people.
Absolutely.
And it was only at the near the end of the 19th century when the modernist movement arose alongside a number of other developments in our culture and in
mm-hmm.
the European culture, that a sort of a theological division occurred within the churches, what we would today call the mainline churches, over very theological issues, some of them cultural, but mainly theological.
And that was the reason why a group of folks, including R.A. Torrey, got together and said, hey, we've got to restore the fundamentals of the faith. This is getting ridiculous.
Right.
And that's when they wrote the book, The Fundamentals, isn't it?
That's That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And shortly after that, I mean, they basically, and they were at that time still struggling to retain or regain control of their churches and seminaries and, mm-hmm. and whatnot, and then eventually saw that that wasn't working, and they were losing ground. And then after the Scopes trial, sort of the general culture of the country turned against them,
yeah.
or they perceived as they perceived it. And basically at that point, they just kind of picked up their marbles and left.
There was a withdrawing, yeah.
Right.
Friends, I want to urge you to get a copy of Jeff's book, Believers, A Journey into Evangelical America. Very insightful, very helpful. You're going to get to $15 or more to Save America Ministries. We'll put it in your hands. Call us 1-800-SAVE-USA. We'll provide to you our fact sheet on the spiritual state of the union with everyone who gets a copy of the book. Call us 1-800-SAVE-USA. We'll be right back.
The Promised Land was straight ahead. God had a showdown with Earth's greatest power broker, Pharaoh, demanding he release God's son Israel from the bondage of Egypt. But after 40 years in the wilderness, the Lord could never get the spirit of Egypt out of his children. Only 2 out of 600,000 male descendants of Abraham were allowed into the Promised Land. Does this apply to us? Over 400 times from Genesis to Revelation, we find the theme, out of Egypt. The Apostle Paul said, "All these things happen to warn us upon whom the ends of the world are come." Yet, American Christians, on the near edge of the Second Coming, are living in the spirit of Egypt as never before. That's why Chuck Chrismeyer's new book, Out of Egypt, is essential. Get your copy of Out of Egypt today for your gift of $17 to Save America Ministries. Call 1-800-SAVE-USA. That's 1-800-SAVE-USA. Build End Time Trust for End Time Trials. Call 1-800-SAVE-USA. That's 1-800-SAVE-USA.
Sometimes you feel like you're just a number. To the banks, the credit card companies, the lenders, and financial institutions, you are just a number. Your credit score. And unless that number is above their standards, you get stuck paying more for everything. Hi, I'm John Commuta, creator of the Transforming Debt into Wealth System. If you don't have perfect credit, banks will either take advantage of you or slam the door in your face. But I want to send you a free tape that shows you how my proven system will wipe the slate clean once and for all. My system doesn't just raise your credit score, it will permanently insulate your credit status so it can never come back to haunt you again. It works no matter how bad your credit is or how much debt you have. Call today and I'll send you a free tape showing you the power of my proven system. You can hit the reset button on your credit score and wipe the slate clean. Let me show you how. Call right now to get my free tape, 1-800-900-1672. That's 1-800-900-1672. 1-800-900-1672.
It's an incredible privilege to be able to stand before you, come before you day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year for 12 and a half years now, as we deal with the most important issues confronting our hearts and our homes. Why do we talk about evangelicalism today? Because, friends, there are struggles right now in our country and around the world. The fallout from these struggles is going to determine destiny. It really is. There are huge issues that are taking place not just within the liberal community, but within the so-called evangelical community that many are saying looks just like the liberal community of 40 years ago. Our special guest today, a veteran journalist, Jeff Scheller, with his book, Believers, A Journey into Evangelical America. Jeff, I don't know what you think about that statement, but my observation, having grown up in the church, my father having been in a pastor, his mother and father both have been in pastors in the Salvation Army. My mother's parents were officers in the Salvation Army. I've got a heritage in numerous denominations going back and forth across the country, and what I've seen is nothing but drift.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, one's perceptions, I think, are shaped by a lot of individual kinds of concerns. And I would venture to say that in every generation, you and I are roughly contemporaries. And when we reach, the fifth and sixth and seventh decades of our lives, there tends to be sort of a pessimism, looking at what's coming up behind you and you scratching your head and shaking your head and saying, where are things headed? I think that that's generally true, and I'm not trying to make light of it and say that there's not valid reason to think along those lines.
Right.
But I think, within the church today, and it's been true in every generation, that the real challenge is, you want to retain your bedrock faith. You have to understand what are the foundations of my faith. What can I hold on to and know that this is valid, that this is real. But at the same time, you have to be open and willing to embrace, to look at your culture and to look at your faith and to try to bring the two things together. You mentioned the magazine called Relevant, and I'm not promoting that at all, but just the term Relevant, I think, is a good word. And that's really been the challenge of the church from day one.
You know what I think? I think our problem is not that the Bible is not relevant. It's that it's too relevant, and we just don't want to preach it in its most relevant way because we feel it's going to offend people and not allow us to build mega churches and have the flow of multimillions of dollars of monies for our ministries. So we're just not willing to preach it in its true relevance. And we have capitulated to the market, and now the master that we claim to serve bows at the shrine of the market.
Yeah, well, there's certainly some truth to that as well. there are a lot of good examples that we could cite of that very thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
But it's we just have to be careful about tarring everything with one brush, because
right.
a lot of ministries have been very successful in changing people's lives and mm-hmm. getting them on the road of faith and really bringing Christ into their lives.
All right, well, let's look at one aspect of that. You call it Wheaton Thunder in your book. Something sets Wheaton College apart from other highly regarded liberal arts schools, their founding motto, for Christ and His Kingdom. It's the flagship, you say, of a burgeoning network of evangelical colleges and universities in the United States, 102 institutions in all, that has seen enrollment skyrocket an amazing 71% since 1990 alone, more than five times the growth rate of public institutions and nearly three times that of all private schools combined. Now, that is an incredible set of statistics. Help us to get inside that.
Well, I think that this really grew out of what we were talking about earlier in the fundamentalist era, when the conservative Bible-believing churches had to go off and start their own institutions in mm-hmm. order to protect and defend and retain the Orthodox faith.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of these schools kind of grow out of that impulse, and some of them actually literally grew out of the fundamentalist movement. But the reason they grow and the reason that they are attractive to so many families and so many young people today is because it allows them to meld their faith and their education, their faith and their worldview.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a matter of trying to figure out where can I fit my religion into my career or into my outlook, but really not allowing that artificial separation to occur in the first place.
Well, what happened with Wheaton College and so many other now Christian institutions, I was served on the board of one Christian university for several years. What's happened there in that time now is being echoed in the homeschool movement, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, well, that's very true. I think there are, just with the growth of the homeschool movement, certainly reflects a concern on the part of a lot of parents, concern that their public schools can't give them what they want, what they think is true and necessary for their children. And, of course, that's their right. I mean, if they don't get to choose what is right for their children, who will? And so the homeschool families, parents, are taking that right into their hands. And, I would like to say that all of them are doing an equally fine job of education. It's, but some of them probably shouldn't be in the business of education. But yeah, I think it reflects some of the same impulses, some of the same concerns. But what is different today in the evangelical college and university movement or world is that there is almost unanimous, and I would say outside of, I could maybe name two schools that would disagree with this, but there is a shared concern that Christianity has something to say to the world. Christianity has something to say to the culture,
mm-hmm.
educational institutions should not be in the business merely of educating pastors and missionaries, but
right.
they should be educating bankers and college professors and journalists and
mm-hmm.
and whatever, because if Christians are going to be salt and light in the world, they need to be in the world, and they need to be taking their faith with them
right.
Wherever they go. And I think that is the market, shall we say, quote unquote, for evangelical colleges and universities.
So the goal is to pull out of the evangelical ghetto, at least prepare people to go into the real world out there and to carry the evangel, of the good news of Jesus Christ, wherever they're working.
In word and deed,
mm-hmm.
and that's exactly right.
Yeah. Now, what is it, what audience were you really trying to address or expecting to respond to your book?
Well, I wrote it primarily, I think, for non-evangelicals
mm-hmm.
who wonder and worry about this group.
Right.
I think they'll find much to interest them
yeah.
in the book. And
I think you did a good job, by the way.
And, because evangelicals are often portrayed in the way that we've been describing as, as fanatics and shrill political. and obviously, reading this book, they're going to find that that's not an accurate description. But I also wrote it for evangelicals. If I've done my job well, hopefully they'll see this as an accurate portrait,
mm-hmm.
and I would hope that they'll read it and commend it to their friends and neighbors, saying in essence to their neighbor, you wonder about evangelical Christians, don't take my word for it. Read what this journalist has written. He
mm-hmm.
got it right.
Yeah. Well, we saw the fall of Ted Haggard, the head of the National Association of Evangelicals. He had joined us a number of times here on this program from Colorado Springs. And we saw his fall from grace, so to speak. We're seeing one after the other. It harks back to what was happening in the 80s, the late 80s, with the fall of PTL and Jimmy Swaggart and others. Do you see a purifying?
Well, it's an ongoing purifying. Sanctification is something that goes on throughout one's life and throughout
mm-hmm.
the Christian history. Getting struggling for an analogy here. Getting on board the train of faith is only the first step up.
Yeah.
And so on an individual level, certainly our lives are always being. Hopefully, we're growing and we're drawing closer to our God in how we live as well as what we believe. And I think within the movement, within our churches, it's a constant purging and burning and refining that
right.
goes on, and sometimes it's painful.
Well, God said he would refine us like a fire, but this last weekend he is bringing something altogether different into the evangelical circle. It's almost a one, some are thinking of it as an actual assault by evangelicals against evangelicals. Dr. Robert Schuller, who really was kind of the godfather of Rick Warren, of the Purpose-Driven Life, and also the head of the Willow Creek, Bill Hybels, the head of the Willow Creek Movement, all seeker-sensitive groups, has convened what they're calling a rethinking conference there at the Crystal Cathedral in California, brought together a strange group of bedfellows, and including some of those that we just talked about, but also including Larry King. And George Bush the senior and Rupert Murdoch, it's just unbelievable. It's almost as if he's intentionally trying to merge everybody into a kind of warm, fuzzy, one-world religion, calling it evangelicalism.
Well, I'm not that familiar with what went on at that concert. I intend to read up on it and see what was actually said. I think in general, I think it's good to always to be rethinking. I think, you know, when we stop thinking and we say, you know, we've got it figured out now, we've got it right, the way we believe and the way we've been doing things for the last 50 years is good enough for now and for the next 50 years, that doesn't wash. I think it's always helpful to say, look, we've got to, yes, our faith is sure, our faith is based on the scriptures, our understanding is still human. And taking what we think we understand about the scriptures and applying it to our day and to our time and to our neighbor and to our society, that requires us to keep thinking and rethinking.
That part of it I understand,
but I don't think it's really any different than what Paul did when he went to Athens and spoke with the gentlemen, the philosophers.
Uh-huh.
And you know, he was trying, you know, was that his most orthodox moment? I don't think so. You know, and when he was commending some of their statues, you know, to the unknown God and so on, he was stepping pretty close to cultural relativism.
But here is a guy. Here is a conference that labels itself as Schuller's dream of an all-inclusive spirituality, not inclusive Christianity, an all-inclusive spirituality. I think we're on dangerous ground. And I just really appreciate, Jeff, what you've done here in your book. I think you've accomplished your purpose. It is well worth reading, and I would urge all of our listeners to get a copy. Your gift of $15 or more to Save America Ministries will put it in your hands. Believers, A Journey into Evangelical America. Call us 1-800-SAVE-USA. We're going to provide a copy of our fact sheet for you, the Spiritual State of the Union. You can get it on our website, saveus.org, or you can get the book on the website.